it would be appreciated. Mine may ring anyway, but that's okay. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this beautiful Tuesday, May 8th, 2012. I would ask the audience to join the Board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good. It's always great to see a nice crowd, and as we move down the agenda, item number 3 is consideration of the minutes.
Move approval of the minutes. Second.
Been moved and second, the approval of the minutes. Are there any corrections or additions to the minutes of our 5-1-12 meeting? Seeing no one, hearing no one, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Public comment, number one, this is an opportunity where individuals may comment on items that is on today's agenda. Is there anyone that would like to address the Board regarding a topic on today's agenda? Okay. I would just note that under additional item number 6, for those of you in the public, there will be a discussion about the Master Matrix public review for the Upchurch Freeders Incorporated confinement feeding operation. If there's anyone that is here wanted to speak directly regarding that, you could speak at this time during the public comment portion since this is on the agenda. And then if after Margaret has given her presentation to the Board, I certainly believe the Board would be willing to allow for any additional comments to be made based upon what you hear. But this would be appropriate for you if there's anyone that wanted to comment on items before we hear the presentation on that item. Okay? Hearing no one, then we will move on to our first item is a public hearing item. That is the consideration of the first reading of Ordinance 215, amending the Story County Land Development Regulations. Planning and Development Director Leanne Harder.
Morning.
Good morning.
What's before you for Ordinance Number 215 is first consideration of the amendments for the Story County Land Development Regulations. Take a step back. This is staff initiated. Annually, we come before you as staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission with a cleanup ordinance. Essentially, this is part of that. What's before you, but we also have some proposed modifications as related to the 35-acre minimum. The majority of my presentation will focus on the 35-acre review changes rather than the cleanup items. If there are any specific questions, they were laid out in the ordinance and the proposed changes on. I can talk about those as well. The 35-acre review, as you all know, is a requirement. The 35-acre minimum is a requirement of our A1 zone district. It requires 35 acres. There are 3 exceptions to that. If it's a legally established lot of record, it may be buildable regardless of size. If there's an existing farmstead, it may be divided from the remainder of the farm with a 1 acre, and then LISA, our land evaluation site assessment. Over the past couple of years, several concerns have been voiced from different facets related to mortgages, having second and third generations returning home, tied to development of local food production. Is it difficult to see? There. Monotony of the rural landscape, many others. With those concerns, about a year ago this time, the Board directed the planning and development staff to look at the 35-acre minimum, see if there are other alternatives that can be brought forward. We did that, held a joint meeting between the Planning and Zoning Commission and Board last fall, and then from there went forward with proposed amendments, and I will outline those. Essentially, there are 3 proposed changes, adding to the definitions chapter 2 of the regulations, a definition of residential parcel subdivision, amending Chapter 4, which is our base zone district regulations, a fourth exception to the 35-acre minimum, and then amending Chapter 6, which is our subdivision chapter, requirements as appropriate for residential parcel subdivisions. And I hate acronyms, but for brevity, I'm going to say RPSs from here forward. An RPS is defined on the screen. It wasn't before you. But essentially, it's where there's an existing parcel where there's a house that is taxed already. And it would allow for that house to be divided from the remainder and from the original parcel and then have the remainder be buildable. And it is for the sole purpose of creating a second lot that does not conform to the 35-acre minimum. We also propose amending Chapter 4, the base zone district designations, to add that fourth exception, which is letter D down there. A, B, C address the lot of record, the farmstead, and then the LISA. Letter D would then say you can not need that 35-acre minimum and have a minimum 1 acre if you've gone through a residential parcel subdivision process. And then really the heart of the changes are laid out in Chapter 6, the land division requirements. You'll recall this is where we spell out agricultural plats, minor, major subdivision plats. We would have a residential parcel subdivision plat as well. There are several criteria for review. I'm going to go through these individually just to summarize them. First one is that the development lots are intended for residential purposes only. Only two development lots may be created. And as staff's opinion, I think that the commission, too, you get beyond that, too, you really need to be going through a rezoning, a true subdivision process. You may have some more impacts than just two homes. Three, the assessment property report card for the property shall show a single-family dwelling or farmstead, as we define in our ordinance. Number four, there's no land set apart for streets, alleys, etc. Again, this is getting to the true nature of a subdivision. Five, it's wholly within the A1 district. And this is what's different from the minor subdivision. The minor subdivision does not allow a subdivision for residential purposes if it's zoned A1. So this gets to the concern of having to rezone a property to then go through a split to create a second house. Number six, both development lots have to contain a minimum of 1 acre net. I want to stress the word development lots, because what this would allow, you could have an outlot. Maybe there's an outlot that they want to share in common for some purpose, maybe a conservation easement. We could still allow a subdivision of three lots, but there can only be two development lots that could go through this process. Again, all setbacks have to be met. All development lots have to have access or to existing road, either by road frontage or easement. Number eight, no variances have been granted in order to allow this to occur. So the original lot cannot have been created through a variance. It needs to be already conforming with the regulations. And then nine, you can do a residential parcel subdivision one time. Beyond that, you can't do it again. You can't take a 40-acre piece, take the farmstead out with 10 acres, create two 5-acre lots, and then take each of those two 5-acre lots and use this process and create two 2.5-acre lots. The cumulative effect really means it should be going through a minor or major process and rezoned accordingly. The procedure that staff proposes is obviously has to be defined by the Board of Supervisors, but we would like to see something similar to agricultural plat where it comes directly to the Board of Supervisors. At third consideration, if we'll have a resolution to add that type of process to your development review procedures. And the SMIL requirements, as you see defined, are very similar to those of minor and agricultural plats. On Monday, April 2nd, the Planning and Zoning Commission did review the proposed amendments, again, both the cleanup element and then the changes to 35-acre. They had some proposed modifications, and that was in essence, adding the word development prior to lots, so we could allow for the development, the creation of outlots. The draft regulations, however, before you have do reflect that change. And so your alternatives are on the screen, and I will be glad to answer any questions.
Well, Leah, the first question I think was just answered right then, as I was wondering when you first talked about staff initiatives and a lot of this was driven by staff as part of the cleanup and so forth, is had the commission reviewed the changes in the process, and during that time, were there opportunities for the public to comment to the commission? So that's one of my questions.
Yeah.
Did we receive much feedback from anyone regarding the proposed changes?
No, we have not. And to answer your question, when the Planning and Zoning Commission met in April, they actually met in two separate meetings. The first meeting was held earlier this year to do just the cleanup, and then the April meeting was just on the 35-acre minimum, and there was no public comment received.
Leanne, can you take me through a hypothetical situation involving a building lot, a developable lot that we can't do now that we would be able to do if we do this?
And the thing to keep in mind, it has to have a house in existence.
Okay.
And we initially, at staff level, thought about going back to that definition of farmstead, which has the house created by 1977. Given that some of the concerns relate to size of mortgages currently, if we have to go back to that 1977 year, there's going to be a huge gap in time where a lot of the newer houses have been constructed, where that mortgage is really limiting factor right now, will not be affected. But to answer your question, yes. We have a 10-acre piece, and I'll use two examples. One, we have a house that was built in 1930s, and a son or daughter has returned to Iowa. They want to live there. We don't allow two single-family dwellings in the same parcel. That 10-acre piece has already been divided from the original 40-acre piece, so that first split has been thrown out. Any further divisions would require a subdivision. Without this process in place, they would have to rezone it. And that's saying none of the other exceptions apply. Rezone it and then go through a full-fledged minor or major subdivision. This would allow them to, without having to rezone it, divide that. And as long as both parcels have 1 acre, the new parcel would be considered buildable.
And when your definition of a house, would it have to be in livable condition?
No. On farmstead, because what we would go back to our farmstead definition.
In actuality,
the farmstead definition does not even require the house to be on the property. In that case, it could be vacant as long as we could definitely show that there was a farmstead there at one time. With a caveat, it cannot have been returned to row crop production because once, and the ordinance is very clear, once that farmstead is removed in total and row crop production has begun again on the property, that farmstead ceases.
Okay.
So this wouldn't even apply at all. The other hypothetical situation could be a house that was built in 2005. They bought the 35 acres because that's what we required at the time. Their mortgage is, the bank has come back to them. They've gone to the bank and wanted to refinance. The bank has said, no, we can't on that size of lot. You have to have 10 acres or 7 acres. They come to us and we say, well, you'll have to go through maybe a plan amendment, maybe a rezoning, maybe a subdivision. Months later, they're able to refinance. They've probably maybe, well, in this market right now, they probably have kept that same lower interest rate, but those can fluctuate. This would allow them within a matter of weeks to submit, go through the process, get that divided off, and then even have a buildable lot as a result, too. And the premise behind that, it's already been taken out of agricultural production. Once it's beyond that, under that 35 acres, the concern for conventional row crop reduces somewhat.
Okay.
And this is a request that you've gotten on and off.
I can't even tell you that countless times. I know in the past 2 weeks we've had two property research requests come in that they'll wait to see your action on this because the house already exists, but the lease exception does not apply. Obviously, the farmstead exception does not apply because it's already there and the lot of record is not applicable. And so they'll see what happens here. If not, so that they can refinance, and a lot of times the banks are requiring them to refinance. It's a catch-22 in some instances. We've also had a lot of concerns from the local food production aspect, too. The cost of land, as you all know, is very high in Story County. And if a first-time farmer wants to go out and buy the 35 acres, 40 acres, whatever, it's very difficult. We get in some question of agricultural exemptions, but the ag exemption does not exempt them from subdivision regulations. That's only zoning. And so this is a means to actually help to cultivate our local food production as well by allowing that smaller lot size in the A1 district, but not doing away in total with the 35-acre minimum.
Do you have any concerns about us passing this, doors that it opens, unforeseen consequences?
We've tried to run all the scenarios on staff. I mean, I don't think so. We have the study that we did last year that we presented to you all showed that over 1,000 parcels contain at least 2 acres that this could potentially affect. Are we going to get 1,000 RPSs in this year? I sincerely doubt it. I don't think. I imagine we'll get half dozen to a dozen this within a year of this being approved. But what you all can know that as staff, we're going to be reviewing this, each one that comes in, and if there are trends, we'll be back to you. And I think that's your expectation, that we will come back to as part of either our annual cleanup or there's a real red flag here that we need to address.
Leanne, I noticed in going through your cleanup and some of the changes that there were some areas completely stricken, such as sign permits and use principles and things of that nature. Could you just relate the rationale that may have been used, and you did that, I think, item number 53, the plat of survey required, looks like, again, part of that was stricken, but the two particularly was on assigned permits and use principle.
Sign permits, it's redundant to have a definition of a sign permit in the ordinance. We actually, sign permits operationalized are implemented by issuing a zoning permit. We don't technically have a sign permit in our regulations nor the way we've issued permits. And so that's the rationale. Why have a definition if you don't have that type of permit? See, what was your other one?
Right below it. It was use principle, again, was mentioned, I believe, number 26 on the third.
That's actually earlier in the ordinance under P's is called principal use. So we don't need it in there two times. And it's incorrectly used under use, comma, principal. And then under plat of survey, page 53, the requirement to not have an acknowledgement of consent to plat along with plat of survey, we haven't been doing that. And it's just another step that it's not necessary to have. The state code does not require it with the plat of survey.
Well, those were the only questions that I had. Okay. Anything else? Any other questions to Leanne before we open this for consideration to the public? Okay, hearing no further comments, I will open the public hearing and ask if there is anyone that would like to speak to this ordinance 215. Seeing no one, I will close the public hearing portion and board your consideration on first reading of ordinance 215.
I'll move approval of ordinance 215 on the first reading and set the second reading for 10 o'clock on May 15th.
Second.
It's been moved and second. The approval of ordinance 215 on first reading and set the second reading for 10 o'clock on 5/15/12. Any further discussion? Hearing no further discussion, Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Approved on first reading and second reading will be on 5/15/12. Thank you. Okay. All right. Now moving on down to additional items. The first item is discussion of the 2012-13 Insurance and Wellmark Program with Iowa State Association of Counties and Wellmark. Amanda, please, you're going to do this by yourself. You're going to bring anybody with you.
Just me this morning.
Okay. Mate. Amanda Becker, thank you. Welcome.
Got some handouts here quick.
Is this one the same thing?
Yep.
Okay, that's in the package, but I can take one from, this will be what she'll keep, so I'll just take one for myself, unless she wants one over there.
Did you have the wellness program
planned
out as well?
Yep, it's there. Yep. Don't say that too loud.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Amanda Baker. As Wayne said, I work for Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield, and it's my pleasure to visit with the 24 counties that are involved with the Iowa State Association of Counties Health Insurance Plan. And so this year, coming out again, like usual, to go over the information, to be transparent with you on the financial status of the pool. So first, we'll go through the PowerPoint you have in front of you, the Iowa State Association of Counties Fiscal Year 2011 report. And again, there's information related to the overall association and Story County. So if we go to the second page. Over to the right hand of the information that you have in front of you is the 2011 fiscal year financial overview. You'll also see historical data back to 2006, but we'll focus on this year's information. Again, I'll repeat that there's 24 counties in the ISAC headquarters that come together to purchase health insurance and have been a part of this association over the 30-year time frame since 1981 it was incepted. So during that time frame, there's been funds that the first dollar amount there that you'll see that have been built over the years, $21,248,123.43 is the current fund balance. Again, that money is retained in event of claims being over what we would anticipate to be able to fund for that, in addition to the wellness programs that we'll review, those type of things. So then,
and is there a percentage that that needs to be?
You know, it really varies. Typically with public entities, 1 year's worth of claims is a conservative number, which if you look down, we're close to that number. So this year with the income that's come into the program, you'll see it's the next section, the county premiums. And, again, we'll quickly go through this overall report. If you have any questions, feel free to interrupt me as well. The county premiums, the 24 counties and ISAC's headquarters paid in this year $22,109,639. We received COBRA premiums for individuals that continued their coverage, employees that have left the different counties, $33,490.35. Checking interest for the account that they used to pay the claims of $830.02. Investment interest for the $21 million balance, we do invest that money in low-interest securities, such as similar to what you would do at a county level. We did earn $572,956.98. We also did receive stop-loss credits this year of about $2.2 million. We'll come back to this. This is kind of an anomaly year in terms of a high amount of individual stop-loss claims. We do purchase reinsurance from Wellmark for individuals that would go over $100,000 in claims, and that was the reimbursement that we got back because we did have a number of individuals over that amount. Subrogation credit of $10,391.22. This is due to other insurance being responsible, potentially an auto accident, something like that. We got a credit back for that. Pharmacy rebates of $280,757.84. The agreement with our pharmacy benefit manager allows us to receive rebates back from drug manufacturers, so we did get that credit. And lastly, a miscellaneous income of $36.63. So during the year, we did receive income of in the neighborhood of $25.2 million. During the year, we experienced the expenses that you'll see below, biggest piece being the paid claims, so health, within a hospitalization setting, a provider setting, and prescription drugs. This year, the claims that were paid for the larger group was $21,209,483.55. I will also say that this number is net of any discounts here locally with the Wellmark network and then nationally with Blue Cross Blue Shield. It's also net of those large claimants, that $2.2 million that we also already talked about. Wellmark's administration fee this year to run the program to pay the claims, $571,150.92. The network access fees, as to give us access to those discounts here locally and nationwide, $284,149.80. Pharmacy insight fees payable to Catalyst, who's our pharmacy benefit manager, $60,335.56. The next two items are attributed to our wellness programming, and again, we're going to talk about this year's program and kind of transition into next year and what those details are. We did pay out this year $100,644.78 for disease management programs to help those individuals with chronic conditions such as diabetes, chronic pulmonary artery disease, other cardiovascular, asthma conditions. We have nurses that reach out to those individuals to manage those conditions. And the wellness programming at $195,694.65. This was before the gift card incentive rolled out, so this is mostly the individual counties getting a $30 incentive for the individual contracts that they have covered so they can do wellness initiatives. We also have a consultant that helps with wellness programming at the different counties. State insurance reinsurance pool payment of $145,394.89. Again, that's a required payment that we pay to the state for individuals that aren't insured to pay for those individuals. The stop-loss premium, so we talked about the $2.2 million credit. We did pay out $1,366,934.29 for that coverage. So not only do we pay Wellmark for coverage for individuals that go over $100,000 so that we will be protected at that level, but we also pay them for what we call aggregate coverage, to where if we would reach 10% over the level of what the underwriter projects, we would also be protected. Accidental death and dismemberment insurance premiums, $35,586.35. Each employee has a $25,000 policy. Finance charges on the account that's used to pay the claims, $2,997.75. AD&D administrative expenses of $2,885.40. ISAC's royalty to run the program, they do get a fee of $240,000 annually. Actuarial expenses and insurance division, we do pay $1,000 to do an audit with the CPA every year. And lastly, miscellaneous expenses of $48,671.41 are mostly attributed to a financial advisor that we use to invest that $21 million. So this year, the total expenses did get to about $24.2 million. We did experience a net gain of close to $1 million, and really the reason for this was that $2.2 million credit. So typically you'll see it's a no-gain, no-loss situation for Wellmark in terms of the premiums that are paid in versus the claims that are paid out. This year we had significantly more claims than what was paid in. So $2.2 million in a credit versus the $1.3 million that was paid in. So, again, that's the reason for that excess, and we did grow that fund to $22.2 million going forward. Any questions related to the overall financial piece? Okay. The next page, page 3, goes over all the individual counties and their utilization in the program this year, so you can compare Story County to the other counties. We did have a relatively good year. We're the second county from the bottom. Our premiums compared to the expenses that were paid out, if you look over to the far right, we were 72%. So we did have an excess of about $115,000 this year, which did improve our loss ratio, which I'll show you here shortly. The next page overviews the financial outlook. So we went over the 2011 data. In 2012 and 2013, the projections are shown to the right. So a couple things I'll point out. We won't go through this whole spreadsheet. The wellness program expenses in the middle of the expense section, pretty much right in the middle of the page. In 2012 and 13, you'll see that we budget to increase that expenditure from $195,000 this year to $250,000 in this current year, and then $325,000 in this next year. Again, ISAC has really focused on wellness. Again, you've been hearing about this, I'm sure, and we've been back to do meetings, and we'll talk about that again this year. And we do plan to continue to use those reserve dollars to spend money in that area to keep our healthy pool, to keep the claims costs down. Lastly, to go down to the reserve information at the bottom of the page, we talked about we currently have a $22.2 million fund balance. There is some additional liability in terms of claims that have not been reported yet, so you'll see an annualized IBNR after that $22 million figure in 2011 of $2,300,000. $333,043.19. So to Rick's comment earlier about kind of what standardly we look at in terms of the overall reserve balance, you can see because we have some additional risk in these next couple of years, depending on where the claims will come in based on the projections, we could reduce that reserve to $17 million. So again, being in the public pool, we want to make sure and protect that money. And given worst case scenario, we're trying to balance that to be conservative to protect the overall group. Any questions on that? Okay. The next page shows the different options that the pool has. So the overall ISAC Association of Iowa State Association of Counties does offer a number of plan designs. You all offer plan 8, 9, 10, 11, and 13, I believe, if I'm saying that correctly. Jan's over here. You'll see at the very bottom of the page there's no changes to the plan designs this year. At the very bottom of the page you'll see what the base rate increase is, which is essentially what will apply to Story County. At the very bottom of the page, they range from 5 to 6% in terms of the overall health insurance cost increase. We do not have the base rate. Again, we'll go over what Story County specific rate is, but based on what you pay today, you will be seeing about a 5 or 6% overall increase. So we'll show your specific utilization and what you'll be paying here shortly. The next page overviews Story County's specific utilization since you've been in the plan since 1999. We do use a five-year rolling average to calculate the overall premiums that each county in the pool does pay. Again, this year in 2011, we did have a good year with a 72% loss ratio, but we do use that five-year average. So if we look back to 2007, when we average out those 5 years, we are at the very bottom of the page, you can see 121%. Five-year loss ratio. So, again, we have the ability to improve that going forward, and certainly this year helped that average.
So, in other words, on the five-year, then the following year, one of them will drop off at the top.
Correct.
So, any...
Usually it's 151% that drops off, Wayne. Yeah.
Next year, that big one will drop off. You're right. Good point. The next page just shows for your county, for Story County, the overall income and expense breakout of what you paid this year, what you paid in terms of your premium, $411,362 for an average 53 contracts per month that were covered, so 53 employees on average were covered during the year for this health insurance program. And then in the middle of the page, you'll see your part of the expenses. We went through the overall summary, and then this would be Story County's specific claims, network access fee costs, operating costs, pharmacy benefit management costs, so on and so forth. Your total expenses of $295,848.50 were $115,000 approximately less than those premiums that you paid in, which is why that loss ratio does look so good. This year, our annual cost per contract was $5,582.05 compared to the ISAC average of $11,115.41. So, again, very good year.
Well, the less claims, the better it comes out for all concerned, right?
That's right. The next page kind of shows that calculation of how those rates are determined and how you get benefit for the better loss ratio, as you mentioned, Wayne. So for the different options that you all have, again, on the left side of the page, plans 8, 9, 10, 11, and then on the right side, just plan 13. We did improve our loss ratio this year, but at the bottom you'll see the calculations in terms of how those rates do come into play, and we still are at a level 2 penalty or a 10% increase above those base rates, which the definition of that category is with a five-year loss ratio greater than or equal to 120%. So we're currently at 121%. We're getting close to that number, and next year we certainly could be in that next level to where we would get a 5% discount based on our utilization, which is a good thing.
So is your calendar year the same as ours, July 1st?
It is. Okay. Correct. Correct. The other thing that's not illustrated on this page are the wellness discounts. So I know last year we talked about how with the participation of the individuals in the wellness program, and this past year it was completing the online assessment and doing their physical, counties can get discounts additional to the claims utilization discounts. Story County hasn't yet achieved a discount yet, but final numbers are coming out this week. So if you do get a discount, we'll be letting Alyssa know, Jan knows, to make sure we do pass that information along. So we do have an average of 72% participation in the program this year. So each county that's in the program is getting an average discount of 3%. And again, we'll be back out this next year to talk about the new program and hopefully increase your participation. Page 9 just shows your history of the discounts that you've had. So at the very bottom of the page, you're fourth from the bottom. Over to the far right, you'll see that these past 3 years, in 2013, 2012, and 2011, you have carried that 10% penalty. Prior to that, you were at a base rate. So again, we do have the ability to earn a reduction in that penalty or even potentially discount in the future, but that gives you some perspective in terms of where we've been in the past. The next page just shows, and this one's kind of hard to read, but generally speaking, we already kind of talked about how you were getting, depending on the plan, in the neighborhood of a 5 to 6% increase. About three-quarters of the way down, you'll see Story County and all the different options that you offer. And again, the specific rates that you carry today and what you'll have going forward. You can compare yourself to the other counties over on the right. The base rate increase that's on the next page that the board of ISAC's board did adopt was a 6.76%. A lot of these counties this year are getting an 11% increase, and the reason for that is that they fell into that next discount or penalty category. So, again, Story County has retained that and is only subject to that base rate increase this year, where there are other counties that are in a situation to where they are closer to 11, 12% increases. Next page just shows that, again, the ISAC's Board of Directors did approve a 6.76 base rate increase, and they did apply the discounts and penalties this year, again, which is why you're seeing some higher increases there. And lastly, we do have the information we show you every year historically with the increases that have gone on throughout the time frame of the program. So back to 97, what the average increases were. I think we've had a number of counties that have looked at this program coming in this year. And when I calculate the last 10 years, we've had an average of 6% in terms of an increase year over year for the past 10 years, which is certainly good news in terms of trying to keep, you know, everything on a pretty even keel level, comparatively speaking, to other groups that I work with. You will also see back in 2002, 2003, the spikes that we had, the 22% increase, the 32% increase. That was a situation where that reserve did shrink, and we did have to raise rates to catch things back up. So another reason why that $22 million is nice to have in the bank for occasion where those claims would have a high claims year. If there are no other questions regarding the health insurance piece, we'll get into the wellness incentive program. I know I mentioned this last year, and you're probably familiar with the fact that we did offer the first year in 2011 employees, if they completed an annual physical and a well-being assessment or an online assessment, they were given a $250 gift card. So this next year, we do have year two of the program. We do feel like it's been successful, and I think ISAC's been very supportive of the wellness initiatives and is going to continue to go in this direction. So in year two, we're going to run this program from March 1st of 2012. We've already started it, and it'll run through next February. We will be expanding the program to not only include employees but also spouses that are insured through the program. Last year, they had to complete a physical. This year, there will be a number of tests that will qualify. In addition to the physical, a few would be a prostate screening exam, a pap smear with a gynecological visit, mammography for ladies, colonoscopy, and the Zoster vaccine for shingles. A member will complete a form and submit that back to Wellmark in order to get credit, and we will validate that claim information. The second component of the program, instead of the online assessment this year, we're going to reward individuals for completing action-based programs. So Story County has access to a wellness consultant that will help roll out two wellness programs, and then employees will be rewarded for participating in those. Simply stated, instead of reading through the bottom, basically if an employee completes their preventive screening, they get $50. The spouse also will get a $50 incentive, and they will get $25 for each action-based wellness program. So a total of $150 gift card this year for an employee with a spouse that's covered, or $100 for an individual employee. We'll also be updating wellness committees on a quarterly basis as we distribute the gift cards to give the percentage. So we'll keep you, hopefully, the Board of Supervisors in the loop about where that discount is for this next year. On the back of the page, you'll see a summary of this next year and the way the county discount will be calculated. So similar to last year, but we actually have lower percentages, so it's easier to reach the goals. If we have 40% or more employees completing the preventive test, we'll be eligible for a discount. This year, I know as of March, Story County was at 38%, so it definitely will be more attainable in this next year. Again, the other requirements are the same. The wellness committees will hold 4 meetings per year. The employee benefits meeting that they'll hold, and I know we've scheduled that for June, will have 90% attendance. Wellness committees will provide those 2 approved programs, and then a supervisor will hold an active role. And you can see below what the discounts will be. So 40% participation, you'll get a 2% discount on those premiums. Again, $411,000, that money does add up. Up to a 5% rate reduction for 80% participation of those employees, again, that do elect the health insurance plan. I'll also say that any of the wellness programming, I know ISAC is fully supportive of, although the gift cards and the incentives won't apply, certainly any Story County employee can take advantage of those programs, and we're happy to provide those services for everybody that's a county employee. Any questions on the wellness?
I think that was one of the questions that came up initially, is that if they did not take the county plan, were they eligible for any of the other wellness incentives? And that has been one of the discussions that have oftentimes talked about. And obviously one of the advantages of this is to try to encourage more and more people to become part of the group plan, and at the end result would be the more people hopefully there and the lower the claims, it would be a cost savings for everybody in the long run. But that's a tough one to get people to understand that, you know, if you're not really a part of the plan,
yep.
you can't get all the same benefits.
And you guys, how you have your contribution strategy set up is very different from other counties in terms of the allowance that you give them, which is part of the reason why we're kind of in that situation. But certainly if the county wanted to provide that incentive to people, they could. ISAC's obviously just going to pay for those contracts because those are the people that were paying premium into that reserve. So certainly an option if we wanted to discuss that, because obviously the benefits of wellness go far behind health insurance. It goes to presenteeism at work and, you know, making sure people are healthy to be able to be productive in their jobs. So agree, Wayne.
I just think it's important to point out that it is reasonable to think that our insurance rates could go down next year. We could, depending on claims, we could drop the 151 percent claim to premium ratio from 5 years ago, replace it with something a little better than that, get out of that level 2 penalty that we're paying right now, which is 10%. And then to achieve 5% just seems to me to be completely doable, and I don't think we even got close this year. I mean, we, as a county, we did the things we were supposed to do, but we couldn't convince employees to get a preventative test or screen done, and we had trouble getting the 90% attendance at the meetings. Is that right, Jan, or did we achieve the 90%? Yeah, I don't think we got there, and this is like finding money in the street. I mean, if we can get this done, and with all the talk of insurance, health insurance premiums going through the roof, I think it's reasonable to say we've got a chance next year to pay less than we're going to pay this year, if we'll do a few of these things. So I just think this is important.
Good. Thank you. And thank you, Amanda. Any other questions for Amanda at this time? Okay, so basically this is just a discussion item and just an update as to where we are. Is there any action that we have to have for this other than to receive it?
I believe Alyssa has the paperwork or maybe had brought it in, but we'll make sure that you guys get that to sign off on the health insurance, and then we'll get everything going for this next year.
Great.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
I can do that. There was a sheet in there on the dental. I believe you guys have that. So, again, just as an update for this next year, the ISAC plan that Story County participates in, you'll see the dental plan design at the top, no changes to that. Make sure everybody has it in front of them.
The next to last page, Wayne.
Oh, okay, that's in the
consent. The next to last page.
Yep. So really what we're pointing out is Story County, again, has Plan 1 and Plan 2 that's described on this sheet. And at the bottom of the page, or about two-thirds of the way down, you'll see Plan 1 that's subject to Story County and Plan 2. Those premiums are going up 3%. So very close, I mean, half of what we're seeing for health insurance trend and similar trends for dental right now. So those will be 3%. And, again, you'll be signing off on those as well when you do the paperwork. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Then moving on, the next item on the agenda is item six, Master Matrix Public Review for the Upchurch Feeders Incorporated Confinement. Margaret James, Environmental Health, welcome.
Good morning. This is a Master Matrix review for the Upchurch Feeders Incorporated. They are the applicant that I'm reviewing today. Why do we do a Master Matrix evaluation on some CAFOs and not others? Well, Chapter 65, Animal Feeding Operations, allows for the county to be involved in the permitting process for larger facilities. So the trigger on this is the size of the facility. So if there's greater than 1,000 animal units, they are required to do a construction permit. And then if that construction permit is greater than 1,667 animal units, then that kicks them into the master matrix category if they're located in a county that has adopted the construction evaluation resolution. Story County did adopt that, and we have for several years now. And we do that. We renew it every January. And that enables us to evaluate the project and submit our recommendations to the DNR. Public hearings and reviews are not mandatory, but the Board of Supervisors really likes to have the public input on the larger systems. The Upchurch facility is, this is an expansion of an existing cattle facility. It's about 1 mile from Colo, 7 miles from Nevada, and about 3 miles from Hickory Grove Lake. This is a 2008 photo of it. This is the old look with the open feedlot. And then this photo, I'm not sure when it was taken. It's a Google photo, and it shows the hoop houses on the bottom left there, so quite a big change there. It was taken, the hoops were built in 2009, so that photo is 2009 or later. And then this is the expansion proposal. That rectangle there shows where the slanted monoslope roof will be for the barn, and then there will be a manure, 8-foot concrete manure pit below that.
And right now those are just open lots. Is that what I'm seeing?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so the setback distances and the scoring is based on that new rectangular shape there and not on the existing facility. The current facility has 990 feeder cattle. Addition of 1,200 will bring the total to 2,190. That monoslope barn is going to be 425 by 86. For their manure management plan, those lighter color polygons are where the manure will be applied to the land, with the exception of the system or the very far east area. That's from a dairy cattle. So the star shows where the CAFO is going to be, and then the rest of the pink, except for the one, is where the manure will be applied, land applied. So for the, I'm sorry?
I just like that I'm supposed to see that.
I'm sorry, what?
No, go on forward.
Oh.
I have no idea what's on. I was just laughing because.
Oh, okay. And you're not supposed to be able to read that. But this is what the master matrix looks like. Come on, Rick, get your glasses
Absolutely.
On. Okay. No, don't read the numbers. This is, just look at the chart. This is the master matrix.
I can see the colors.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There are 44 questions that that the applicant can consider. The applicant chooses those items that they want to be scored on, and that is the only things that we can score them on. So out of those 44, this applicant chose 19 to be considered for. So I will briefly go through the 19, and then if you have questions, I'll go into more detail. So for the distance to houses, I should mention top right over there, that's the Beckbar farm property. They signed a waiver for this expansion. If they did not sign this waiver, this expansion could not happen. Okay? So because of that waiver, that house pretty much disappears from all setbacks. So we have to kind of pretend that that house is not there. So for nearest distance to house, they meet that additional setback, so they do get the 65 additional points. Distance to the public use area is the cemetery to the west, and they meet those setbacks. So I agree with the 20 points. Distance to the nearest school, church, or commercial enterprise, I'm not sure if I have this right, but I consider the cemetery as a commercial enterprise. That is within the, but that is still further away from the most points they could get, so they do get that full amount of extra points for that, 30. Distance to the closest water source. This is the field person came out and measured this. And as you can see in the photo there, the water, you know, the waterway starts earlier than where that line is, further north. But it's based on pretty much, they explained to us that if you can't get a vehicle through it, if it's sloped enough, that's where the water source starts. Now, that sounds real technical, doesn't it?
Not a vehicle.
Four-wheel drive, they were saying.
Like the ducks they have up in,
forth. I assumed it would start where you could see water, but that's not true. You have to be able to just really ruin your vehicle getting in it, and then that's where the water starts. So, yes, I agree, they do get the 25 points. Distance to the nearest thoroughfare, you need 100 minimum, an extra 200 to get your points, and they're obviously within that. Distance to nearest critical public area, they easily get the points for that. Distance to public and private wells. There are two active wells and one plugged well on their site in the northeast corner up there, and those wells are all outside that 400 foot to get the points, so I do agree on that. This is a big point item, 50. Story County has no karst topography and no ag drainage wells, as you see up in the top right, so they ought to automatically get the 50 points on that. Distance to the nearest confinement that has a manure management plan. If they're further than the 4,000 feet, they get the points. Distance to the high-quality waters, high-quality resource waters, or protected water areas. Again, we don't have any of that close by, so they get the points. Air quality modeling from the folks up in Minnesota. This, we needed to see some background information. I did not see that in the submitted packet, so I disagree with this 10 points. Liquid manure storage structure is covered. That is the pit that's going underneath the monoslope, so yes, it is covered. Points. Manure storage structure is formed. That'll be concrete, so they get the points. Suitable truck turnaround area so that the semi-trailers do not have to back into the facility from the road. Very important, being on Highway 30, and I agree they do have that ability to turn their trucks around on site. There's no history of administrative orders in the past 5 years. That's environmental and worker protection items. And I confirmed that with one of the attorneys for DNR. construction permit applicant is closest resident to the proposed confinement structure. They are, you know, to the west of the site there. They are the closest. They're living on site. Applicant can claim the family farm tax credit for ag land. Upchurch holds 100% interest and farms contiguous the contiguous farm ground. So yes, I agree. 25 points. Facility size is within that range, so they earn 10 points. Number 26, all manure will be injected or incorporated on the same date it is applied. This is hard to enforce. I think that they are reputable farmers, and I believe that they will hold true to their promise. Total scores, then, total scores, applicant 525. We are just 10 points less simply because of that air quality issue. And they're well above the minimum scores total, the air quality total, the water quality total, and the community total. In summary, the points for all of those have been met. The manure will be incorporated into the soil the same day as the application. That's very important for water quality and air quality for the surrounding area. And the expansion will eliminate open feedlot, which will probably land up improving the air quality and water quality for the surrounding folks. So the action by the board required by the 14th of this month is you must submit recommendation to DNR to approve or disapprove the application, the construction application. Submit a master matrix scoring, so we would just basically submit this PowerPoint. Submit a copy of the matrix as approved by the Board of Supervisors, and then submit proof of publication.
Margaret, on what basis would a board, looking at the study that you just did and the numbers that came up, on what basis would a board recommend disapproval of something like this?
I think that if you had a lot of public input, for example, the Maxwell Farms one that was really close to the river that was the water source for their public wells there, that would be a red flag that you may want to ask DNR to really take a close look. Now, you sending a disapproval recommendation does not guarantee disapproval of the permit. It's just a recommendation, and we're just one piece of the one player in a group of players that deal with this. But I think that would be the biggest, you know, if you're impacting a lot of people and you get a lot of public input, that would be the thing that would turn this down. Upchurches, I believe, is actually an improvement to the older way of confinements, and I think this is a good project.
You need any public comments from anybody?
We have not. DNR has received one. And then when it was explained to them that it would actually be an improvement from the open feedlot, they were happy with that. We did send out postcards asking people if they were interested in having their well tested, and no one replied.
I didn't receive any.
No, I think the one earlier comment, I think, was passed on to you that you referred to the DNR. Coming back to similar master matrix reviews and things of this nature, it is common practice on the part of the DNR that as you go through the scoring process and so forth, that even if there is some areas that appear to be problematic, the DNR generally will work with the owners to come into compliance. And this has happened in one or two incidents in previous situations that we've basically dealt with. But I do think, as Margaret indicated, a lot of the decisions that we have made thoroughly has been based upon the public input and the potential for other water sources being contaminated and so forth. And in each of those cases, they ultimately were approved with some upfront, well, I guess notifications on the part of the owners that they will try to provide as much environmentally protective plans as deemed possible. So that's pretty standard.
Yep.
So questions based upon Margaret, based, and I will, well, I guess beforehand, as I said before, I'm going to allow any members of the public that now that you've heard the presentation and the scoring, if there is anyone that wanted to make a comment prior to the board's decision, feel free to do so at this time. I will give you an opportunity. Good. Do we have owners from the Upchurch folks here? Great. Good. Well, you all have a good smile on your face. Great. Good. Okay.
They gave us a nice tour of their facility. We met with DNR there, and, yeah, things are looking good there.
Well, you know, personally, if I can only put my only bias in it, I'm always like to have locally owned families that are proposing upgrades and improvements. People that are currently living on the property are going to be much more environmentally aware of the impact to the surroundings and the neighbors and so forth. Oftentimes when you get these large privately owned companies coming in from out of state, we don't have as usually as greater compliance, and I'm probably speaking more for what happens in other counties than what we've experienced here in Story County, but I want to thank the Upchurch family for their cooperation and willingness to work with us through this process as well as with the DNR. Good.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, Story County is and will remain an agricultural community. And to me, this is one of the easier ones that I've seen. And I would move that we support, we recommend DNR supporting this project.
Second that.
And moved in second to recommend approval to the DNR of the recommendation, I guess, that we would have to go through the master matrix scoring and all the things that you've outlined. Is that correct? So basically, it would be submitting a recommendation to approve the application. Is that what?
Recommending the approval of the application.
Good. So it's been moved and second that the board will submit a letter to the DNR approving the application. Any there further discussion? Hearing none, I'm going to go with a roll call on this. Sanders?
Aye.
Two?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Motion is approved. And thank you, Margaret, again for your work.
Yep.
You're
very
welcome.
Nice, Margaret.
Thank you.
Thank the Upchurch family for coming in today and running such a good operation out there. So.
Okay, moving on then to item six. Consideration of revision to the asset policies and procedures. Deb Shulroff, Story County CPC.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Deb, how you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
Good. You feel like they're finally going to get done down in Des Moines here before too long?
No. That's the $10 million question. What you have before you are revisions made to the asset policies and procedures. Every year, the administrative team and volunteers take a look at the policies and procedures to see if there are any changes or revisions that need to be made. And as a result of that review, there are some changes I want to go over with you. On your copies, is it highlighted? Okay. Well, we will start then on page 7, section 6. Item C.
Yeah, okay, I got it now.
Yeah.
There, okay. And what we're asking or what we're changing there is in lieu of hard copies of the IRS form, asset will accept electronic copies. And that's mostly what we got this last year. So that saves on paper for the agency submitting that. And that's the same thing, too, with their budgets. They can submit those electronically as well. So that's a minor change. If you drop down to letter H that talks about ASSET being notified of new and expanded services. We deleted the language in this section and reworded it and placed it in another section that we'll address here shortly. Section 12, the funding process, and on page 8, letter H, we're just clarifying when recommendations will be made to the funders, and that will follow after the hearings and the panel work sessions. Prior language just said hearings, but the panel work sessions are truly where the work is done with the volunteers on making those recommendations. So we felt the need to clarify that. And then dropping down to letter J, talking about an agency, if they don't provide the required information or the information is inadequate, incorrect, or not timely, ASSET shall make a report to the funders that procedures were not followed and may recommend that funders' funding be reduced, sequestered, or not allocated at all. The new inserted language there is if we don't receive the information in a timely manner. It really puts the process behind if we're waiting. So we want to keep that going and be respectful for the fact that the funders have budgets that are waiting on these figures and want to keep that moving along.
That never happens, though, does it, Deb?
There's some reasons why this is inserted. So.
I think it's important to note that it's just recommended to the funders, and usually that is prefaced by a considerable discussion regarding, the circumstances surrounding not receiving all those documentation. So I think this is a good addition.
Being snide. I know we've got a couple places.
Yeah.
That's not being followed right now.
Yeah. Right.
Section 14 probably has the most significant change in the process, and this is on page 8 towards the bottom. The need for new or expanded services shall be identified and aligned with the funder's priorities in the priority areas of the most recent Story County Community Assessment. The administrative team will review the information and determine if the service or services meets criteria to be included in the ASSET process. The administrative team will then inform the ASSET board of the decisions that are made. Historically, we've received information on new and expanded services, and we've generally just accepted it, not really weighing it against anything. We feel it's very important when we go through all of the work of the community assessment every 5 years that we use the results of that assessment to identify service needs or service gaps. And so we want to align the new services or expansion of services with that assessment as well as the funders' priorities. And then the admin team will take a look at that and share that with the ASSET board.
I like the clarity of this, and I like getting rid of the gray area that significant changes creates for us.
That is it on the policies and procedures revisions, and as staff, I recommend approval for these changes.
Okay, any further questions to Deb at this time, board? Okay.
I would move approval of the recommended changes.
Second.
And moved and second the approval of the recommended changes as submitted. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Deb. Okay, then moving on to asset policies and procedure document.
And one more.
We're down, excuse me.
The redesign.
Oh, I'm sorry. How did I miss that?
No, you didn't miss it. That's just what we've gotten to now. We just did the policies and procedures.
I think we're all getting used to the new format.
Oh, I'm sorry. You bet. Gotcha. A discussion of MHDD redesign. Good. Thank you.
Okay. Redesign is essentially in two sections. There's a policy section, which is Senate File 2315, and then there's the funding section, which is part of the tax reform bill and the Health and Human Services budget. And I'll just go over briefly what's in the policy part of the bill in Senate File 2315. This did pass the House a couple of weeks ago with some amendments. It's now in the hands of the Senate to take a look at. In the policy bill, criteria is outlined for forming regions. Counties looking at regional administration and implementation of services within the regions. There would be outcome and performance-based contracting, a management plan, budget and annual reporting to the Department of Management and Department of Human Services, much like we are required to do now, a regional administrator, and a regional board. And the regional board would be made up of a board of supervisors member from each of the counties within that region. The one thing that's changed with the regional concept is originally there were population requirements. There had to be between 200,000 and 700,000 population within a region. They have entirely removed that. So a region could be one county. There is an exclusion or waiver language in the bill for that. It could be two counties. It could be 22 counties. It just depends on the county boards of supervisors that will end up making those decisions. Also in the bill are core services that each region is required to either provide or have access to its residents for. And those core services are outpatient mental health services, with the exceptions of medications, which I kind of found interesting. So a person, we have to make sure that there's psychiatric evaluation and med management services, but there's no requirement to make sure that medications are available. And that's something, at least here in Story County, that we promote and make sure there's funding for, especially for individuals who are not covered by any kind of insurance. They're underinsured or uninsured, and they're waiting to get on a pharmaceutical program. We try to bridge that gap by providing funding for their medications. But that would be something that would be up to a region if they wanted to cover. Inpatient mental health treatment, 24-hour crisis response, supported community living, supported employment, recovery services such as peer support and family support, health homes, service coordination, and access to co-occurring services. And they've broadened the definition of co-occurring from not only mental health and substance abuse, but mental health and intellectual disabilities or mental health and developmental disabilities. So they've really broadened that and want to make sure regions are making sure there's access to those services. And access is pretty broadly defined. It might mean that maybe there's a specialty service that's not necessarily offered in one particular region, but it's in the region next door. And so we're just making sure there's access to those services. And those are just a list or an example of the core services. There are quite a few more than that. The priority groups appear to be persons with mental illness and intellectual disabilities. Anybody that has a brain injury or a developmental disability could be grandfathered in, depending on whether or not counties within a formed region have been providing services to those groups and if there are dollars available to continue providing those services. Assessments, standardized functional assessments will be required to determine service needs, and we're unsure at this point in time who will be doing those assessments or how those assessments will be provided. So we have the core services, then there are core plus services, and examples of the core plus services include jail diversion, subacute level of care, which is similar to our transitional living program here in the county, critical incident training for law enforcement, mobile response, and civil commitment pre-screens, and assertive community treatment. So those are core plus services. The bill also looks at standardizing the appeal process. So if someone doesn't agree with a decision that's made in terms of their services, they can appeal that to the Director of Mental Health and Disability Services through the Department of Human Services. Legal settlement will be replaced with residency. That will take place in fiscal year 2014. And the timeline for the regions to be formed, regions have to be a 2080 agreement will be the document that forms the regions, and that will need to be done by April of 2013. And then regions have to be into full implementation by June 30th of 2014. Any questions so far? Okay. Regions, depending, one of the pieces of language that is kind of all throughout the bill is services will be dependent upon available funding. So that means for the regions and funding from the state. And so as a result of that, it is still allowed for waiting lists to be implemented as a way to manage services and the needs of the population within any given region. As far as children's services go, there is language in the bill that talks about developing a mental health service delivery system for children, and there's a work group that was formed last fall to deal with that. That work group will continue to meet for another year and then provide a report back to the legislature in December of 2012 on how that particular part of the system will be structured, how the services will be delivered and funded. So that's the policy piece. Any questions or comments before I move into the funding?
There was some discussion that the risk pool dollars that were currently allocated or available now would not be available under this plan, and that there would be a kind of a separate entity set up where dollars would be put aside to assist counties. Has that been more discussion regarding that? Is that something that's been finalized as yet, or are they still just contemplating what to do with that?
As far as I know, that the funding piece is what's creating a lot of discussion and is kind of holding up any further passage of the bill, because the policy and the service side is so intertwined with the funding side.
Right.
And I'll jump into that, Wayne.
Before we go to funding, is there anywhere that Story County does not qualify to be a standalone region, if you will?
No, all it says in the bill as far as a county seeking an exclusion is that we would have to meet the same standards and criteria of a region. So we would have to make sure we can provide all the core services or have access to those services, that we can meet the criteria for performance-based contracting and annual reporting. And it's the Department of Human Services that will look at those exclusion applications and decide whether or not criteria is met, and whether or not Story County in this case would be able to be a standalone region. My concern with this exclusion language is, although it's in legislation right now and if it's passed by the Senate, I don't know if it's a long-term allowable concept. I don't know if it's something that will eventually have to be reviewed, and DHS could come back at some point in time, the legislature could come back at some point in time and say, you know what, we know you've had this exclusion for a couple of years, but we really think now you need to jump into a region. And by that time, if you're a few years down the road, regions have already been created, they've already developed their policies and procedures, their management plan, their board's been formed, and so then you're knocking on the door of a region saying, hey, can we come in? And you haven't been a part of that planning process that region had in the very beginning, and I think there's some things that could be lost. But I think in the same token, we need to look at the pros and cons of both exclusion or joining up with other counties. I think money's going to end up getting tighter and tighter as we see this laid out and implemented in terms of what the state will truly be able to afford to do and how much they'll actually prioritize these services. I know there are counties that are talking about filing exclusions, and there are big counties and little counties, but that is something we can take a look at. The funding piece, one of the big changes that will take place, right now the counties are mandated to pay for about 38% of certain kinds of Medicaid services, and the Department of Human Services wants to take that over and fully fund those services, so that would remove that particular mandate. And by DHS doing so, that apparently qualifies them for some additional federal funding. So, and there are a lot of requirements around those mandates anyway. And at this point in time, DHS is still looking at wanting to do that come July 1st of 2012. So just a couple of months away.
What is the cost of our 38%? Story County.
Yeah, the mandated cost comes out of the community services budget. But then we also bring some revenue in because we provide the targeted case management service. And then Community Life is providing some of those Medicaid services, so they're bringing in some revenue. So so we're paying out, but we're also bringing in some revenue. And I think between all of that, we have calculated that it's roughly been about $2 to $3 million of our $10 million budget that we're paying out.
That we're paying out, and if DHS took that over, would we lose the provision of those services? So then would we no longer provide the services where we've got the revenue coming back in?
No, we would continue providing the services. We would continue providing the services. It's just that the county is not paying the non-federal share. DHS is taking that over. So it's actually taking away one of our expenditures.
Right, but not reducing one of our potential revenue line items.
Correct.
So, I mean, what I'm hearing is it's a 20% plus part of our budget right now if DHS were to take that over.
Right. So that's the one side of it. The flip side of it is DHS needs money to cover the cost of these services. And this alludes, I think, a little bit to the email, Wayne, that you talked about earlier. And so what they want to do to bring dollars into their coffers to pay for these services is they want to pull the funding that the counties receive from the state. And that would include our property tax relief dollars. And for Story County, that's about $2 million. They also want to pull our community services and growth allocation, which is about another $2 to $3 million. Even though the combination of those dollars exceeds what Story County pays, they would pull all of it. So that they could statewide be able to pay for all of these Medicaid services, and they would do that in each county, which puts us at a deficit starting July 1st because we build our fiscal year 13 budget around the information we had at the time, which was assuming those state dollars would be there for 2013. Mm-hmm. But the legislature is saying, well, we need to start having a transition year, so why not start with 2013? Wayne, getting back to what you asked about the risk pool funds, that concept would be disbanded. And what they would do then is they would create a transition fund for fiscal year 13 for counties to apply so that we would have money then for our non-Medicaid services. They're saying we don't want to see any services cut. We want to keep them at the fiscal year 12 level. So we'd have this pool of money that counties could apply for. And on the House side, they were looking at putting about $10 million into this transition fund. But we would have to make application for these dollars, and applications wouldn't be taken until October. And in looking at how our budget is set up and the flow of dollars, we'd have a cash flow issue beginning July 1st. So that's a concern for fiscal year 13. When we move into fiscal year 14, that's when the legal settlement concept goes away. It's replaced with residency. And then they also start using a new funding formula looking at per capita, a levy looking at per capita versus our hard dollar cap levy that we've had in place for many years. The per capita amount would be set at $47.28. And those counties that are below that would then get state dollars to bring them up. Those counties that are above $47.28 would be required to drop their levies to the $47.28. So they would lose local dollars. If you figure our per capita amount right now, just in the MHDD fund, it's $34.25. So we're below the $47.28, and the state would make up the difference, which is about $1.4 million, $1.6 million. And we would still be able to levy our $3 million as we do today. So we would have roughly in levied in state dollars about $4.2-4.3 million. We'd still get some extra dollars from the state to cover some state cases. And our non-Medicaid services exceed that amount by about $1 million.
Well, what's of interest to me is, since I serve on the risk pool board, which is the funding mechanism that is in place right now, and if this takes place, the risk pool board was a legislative, had to be approved. This was a governor's appointment, and it had to be approved by the legislature. Well, if they want to start this by July 1st and the legislature has dropped, they need to begin to act right away, because basically they will not have a board approved to actually deal with this. And so either they're going to ask the risk pool board to automatically become this new transition funding board, and I'm just wondering if they can basically do that without going through the process of the legislature and the governor approving that.
It was my understanding they wanted to create a whole new committee to look at the transition funds, mm-hmm. which is going to take time to do.
Right.
The other thing that the state is saying that they'll do as a, and they would do this coming up in fiscal year 13, is on institutional bills and some of the Medicaid services, counties have disputed bills out there. They're disputed because maybe the wrong rate had been charged. The units of service that were approved were exceeded by what was billed. We've got folks who go to Oakdale for mental health evaluations, and it's our county attorney's position that those evaluations need to be funded by the state and not by the county through MHDD dollars, because the person goes to Oakdale for those evaluations because of criminal charges. And so in total, Story County has about $400,000 in disputed bills sitting out there, and they'll date back to 10 years ago. We dispute the bills, we provide the information to the Department of Human Services, and then it just kind of sits there. And I understand they have limited staff to deal with these bills, but this is statewide that those bills are sitting there. And what the legislature is saying, that they would forgive the amount of those disputed bills up until a certain date. And I think right now the date is July 1st of 2011. So anything that has accumulated up until July 1st of 2011 would be written off the books. I'm not sure the governor is quite at that same point. I know he's been said that he thinks the counties should just pay the bills. So that's another concept that is being discussed in the legislature as well.
And maybe you said it and I missed it. How much do we have that would qualify as in that disputed portion of bills right now?
About $400,000. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I want to make sure that I'm hearing, and I'm just focusing on FY13 right now, because I don't buy that we know what anything is going to look like for FY14. But the scenario that you laid out this morning, if DHS were to take all the Medicaid payments, and on the other side take all the state revenues back, we would go, right now we're roughly $10 million in revenues and $10 million in expenditures in mental health. And that would go to $8 million in expenditures but $6 million in revenues, roughly. Is that
that's
correct. So we are potentially coming up here in 2 months, $2 million upside down in mental health before we even start the year. And that's just something that we better stay closely on top of. I don't have any idea how we even start to get there.
Yeah, lots of cuts. Closure of some programs.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, longer term, as I'm hearing it with the $47, and we're only at $34 per cap right now, it starts to look better for us if they continue on the path they're on. Not guaranteeing, but the transition of getting from there. Are there other counties that are in our position in this?
Well, yes, a lot.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the other larger counties are, and a few smaller counties that have had waiting lists, recently. But Linn County is, I think they were looking at a $5 million deficit beginning July 1st, if this change in funding was made as soon as July 1st.
A transition that kills programs doesn't sound like much of a transition to me.
especially when they're also saying we don't want any services cut. And they think that by setting up a transition fund, that's going to bridge counties to get from fiscal year 13 to fiscal year 14. But in the email that Wayne got this morning from the supervisor's lobby, it doesn't sound like they want to put any money into the transition
right.
fund.
Right, but even if they put, you said $10 million earlier in the transition fund, even if they put that $10 million in, okay, we take two and Linn County takes five, that leaves $3 million for
exactly.
the other 97 counties.
There was the whole question about whether or not that was even going to be enough for counties to access.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else, Deb, on that topic?
I don't believe so. Gail, did you have anything from the provider side?
No. Okay. Much concern from the provider side on which programs will close okay. and how it gets managed, what happens to the persons who are presently receiving services, looking at the irony of, yes, please include jail diversion programs, but closing the programs that you can divert to,
Well, Gaylor or Deb, would you just, because this is audio, is available to the public, they may not have been able to pick up your comment, if you could maybe just come up very quickly so that you could repeat that, I think it would be, we would appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, Gaylor's making your way up here. The discussion that we had at the Mental Health Criminal Justice Task Force last Friday was even with the regionalizing of counties and then pulling resources, what does that do here locally? Because we have that local buy-in through the asset process to help support these services. And if the county's dollars are going to end up being pooled with the counties in the region, if we go the regional route, then what kind of a financial transfer does that make then to the City of Ames and the dollars they put into the asset process for disability services or United Way or GSB? Because their dollars wouldn't be pooled. They would still stay within the asset process. And so we just had some discussion about changes that it could make to the other funders. No answers, but, I mean, the discussions need to occur so we can start planning for the future.
My comment was that from the provider side, there's much concern about which services will be cut because if the funding stays the way that it looks as it does now, it will require cuts and significant ones. Some of the core services and core plus services that are being included in the bill, such as jail diversion, which we very much support and have had a successful run with and want to continue that. One of the short-sighted pieces of that is that if the funding doesn't exist for the system as it is, there's nothing to divert to. Another concern statewide that's out there is residential facilities, group homes per se, which are largely county funded, are not included to come under any sort of state funding. At the present time, there's about 3,000 people who receive services in those and not a lot of provision for what happens. We often have referrals that come in and they have not qualified yet for benefits. They haven't started that process, which can take sometimes up to a year. And at that time, counties bridge that, just like Deb was talking about with the medications and things like this. Those folks all stand to have no funding because I think that there's been a misconception from the state side and from the people who've been planning this, that everybody qualifies for Medicaid. Well, they might, the majority might over time, but it does take time in that transition. And in the meantime, those people still are requiring services. They're the people who show up then at your emergency rooms and jail settings. So it's a shift that we want to do everything that we can to stem and maintain the services that we have here presently in our system. So,
well, both of you have sat through budget sessions with me, and anybody who has knows that I am generally a big fan of cuts. I just tend to like them. That said, and I've really approached this whole mental health redesign with, you know what, whatever they end up handing us, we're going to deal with, we're going to move on, we're going to do the best we can for Story County. But the absurdity of deciding, or not even making a final decision yet. I mean, here we are in May, and making a decision where we've got to go in and figure out roughly a 20%, potentially 20% cut to what was reasonably and prudently budgeted for in the fiscal year that starts July 1st, it's the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard. And you're talking about a segment of our population that is the most vulnerable, the most in need. If we don't deal with it there, we're going to deal with it in other areas in our budget. I mean, to me, this is everything that's wrong with government right here. You do the best you can to make reasonable decisions, and then the rug gets yanked out. And like I say, I'm not worried about FY14 right now. We'll deal with whatever we've got to deal with in forming regions or not forming a region and what the funding looks like and everything else. We've got time to plan for that. This, to me, is ludicrous. I hope that all of our representatives understand that what they're doing to our most vulnerable, or potentially doing to our most vulnerable, is unconscionable. I mean, this really makes me mad.
Well, they've worked on this for 2 years, and it gets worse the further along they go. I can't imagine what it's going to look like when they finally get it finished. I mean,
well, and even if they did something terrible that didn't hit us until FY14, we would have an opportunity to deal with it. I'm not saying that there would be great decisions, but we'd have an opportunity. There's no way to make good decisions at this point if they do this for FY13.
Less than 2 months out.
So a good reason to contact legislators, and that's been my mantra, is, you know, I understand we have to have a transition period, but let's plan ahead for that period and not feel like we have to make the changes immediately, because I think that's just going to set the system up to crumble even faster if we jump at wanting to make a change come July 1st. There needs to be time to plan for that. And we can't help it that we have to have our budget certified by March 15th. That's law. And so we adhered to the law and used the information we had at that time to make those decisions.
Additionally, not knowing what direction they're going to go makes even planning in the short haul on how we attempt to address whatever deficits may be coming makes this impossible. Like, I'm thinking back to when we thought at one point, I'm thinking back several years ago, where we thought that we had spent our ending fund balance to the point that we were in good steads with the state to be able to qualify for the funding allocation from them, only to find that they had reduced it at the last minute. It's kind of like playing crazy eights when somebody's playing slapjack. It's very hard to keep the rules straight and how to be planful and fiscally responsible.
Well, I go back to last year. We tried to be fiscally responsible and reduce our levy based on information that they had given us that it was okay to do that as long as we were within a range, and then we find out after the fact that it wasn't okay. I mean, like I say, you guys have not heard me rail a whole lot against where this may be going. I frankly have not thought about it, but I haven't worried about it because we were going to do what we needed to do for the future. But the idea that, okay, we're required to get all of our budget stuff put together as quickly as we can. We're required to make our expenditure estimations and our revenue estimations. But then they can come back to us in the middle of May or later and say, oh, no, you know what? We've decided to affect your budget by 40% all said and done. Okay, I'm done, Wayne. Thanks.
As long as you don't lose your hair like I have over the last few years, you'll be okay. Thank you. Anything else?
Oh, that's all I have on, right. The redesign.
Okay, great. Then we'll move on to, thank you as well, Gayla. We'll move on to the next item, then consideration and discussion on the community mental health service and the FY11 Richmond Center audit.
You know, I really didn't need to be stirred up before we got to this part of the conversation. Now it's really good.
Okay, well, there are really two items here. And the first one is a form that I had forwarded to from the Department of Human Services that is required to be signed and reviewed by the county for indicating who the county is contracting with for outpatient community mental health services. And so that will be a change for fiscal year 13. That will be Eiley Ball Community Mental Health Center rather than the Richmond Center. And before we are asked for your action on that, I do want to give you some updates on Eiley Ball. And we have some good news here. They have found a location in Ames to provide services, and that location is 2521 University Boulevard, Suite 121. It's between the Gateway Hotel and Holiday Inn. And there are two office buildings that look alike. The first one is not where Eiley Ball is at, but if you drive a little farther west and there's a parking lot that separates the two, it's the one that sits behind the first building. And the suite, the address is clearly indicated on outside of the building. And SciRide, I think the Brown Route does go by that particular location and actually has more service than the Pink Route, which was a location that Eiley Ball was originally looking at on Good. East Lincoln Way. Mm-hmm. So,
2521 University, okay.
University Boulevard, Suite 121. Staffing, they have a clinical director hired, and he is out and about and has actually a meeting with him and another staff member later this week to talk about intake process. Earl Kilgore is his name. He's a licensed psychologist and has been in the mental health and disabilities field for about 30 years, and he'll be the Story County clinical director. They are really close to landing an ARNP, and they have office support staff hired who will also help with the filing of insurance and other kinds of financial kinds of things, just to at least get up and running. They do plan on having the doors open come July 1st, and will be initially offering psychiatric assessments, medication management, and individual and group therapy. So they kind of want to start out slow, but we'll be working on enhancing those services as time goes on. And they do have a meeting already set up with Mary Greeley to talk about the crisis response services, and they're getting their subcontract in place with YSS to provide the services to children with adolescents. It's my understanding that YSS, in providing those adolescent services, will do so in their own facilities. It won't be done at the University Boulevard facility. Transitioning, the outreach clients, they've been working with Community Life on transitioning those clients, and there have been about 40 referrals made so far. And there are continued regular meetings between Richmond Center and Eiley Ball on transitioning other clients for the other outpatient services. And I do have a letter ready to go out this week from the county to the county-funded clients about this transition now that we have a location and a phone number for those individuals to call. And right now the phone number would be Earl Kilgore's cell phone number. They don't have the landline phone available until the early part of May. But if somebody needs to be seen immediately, then Earl will help them get into the Des Moines clinic. And then once the Ames clinic is open, they'll transfer their services up here. So they're working very diligently on that. And I think what we're going to do, too, once the services are up and running, we're going to have regular communication meetings with Story County staff and Eiley Ball just to make sure things are going smoothly and to address issues before they become too big.
Okay. All right. And then the second item?
Well, before we do that, do you want to take action on the form to...
Yes, I did to designate Eiley Ball as the mental health provider. Okay.
That's my recommendation.
Okay, it's been moved. And moved in second that the county will designate Eiley Ball as the community mental health provider. Any further discussion?
The other thing that comes with that is federal dollars. There's a federal block grant that comes through the Department of Human Services and then is filtered down to community mental health centers. And in Story County, that block grant is about $80,000. And that money is made available on the federal fiscal year. so starting in October. So those dollars would then be channeled to Ierley Ball. They already received those dollars through Polk County and Warren County, so they're familiar with the process and the requirements.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. And now discussion on consideration on the Richmond Center audit.
This is just an update that the board had requested, and I have had an opportunity to talk to Kevin Houston with Houston Seaman. They're an accounting or an auditing firm in Boone County, and they've done the Richmond Center audit for many years. And Kevin had indicated that they were about a third of the way done with the fiscal year 11 audit.
When was that due to us?
Per our asset policies and procedures, audits are to be turned in within 6 months of the end of the agency's fiscal year. And so we should have received it around December.
Yep.
Kevin indicated that in the early part of December, they had sent a request to the Richmond Center for several items that they needed to start the audit. They got a couple of those items turned in. There was some other information that was turned in, but wasn't sufficient enough to do the work that they needed to. And so there had been communication made to the Richmond Center about what it is they still needed. As of yesterday, I believe, there was communication from CFR's auditor, which is a company out of Fort Dodge, and that auditor had contacted Kevin Houston and said that they would be working with the CFR staff and getting the information necessary to get the fiscal year 11 audit completed. I think everybody wants closure to this. I'm honestly not sure what all we'll do with the information other than it does meet contractual obligations with the funders, including the state. And I think from Kevin's comments, they do just want to try and get this done as soon as possible. There's also a tax return for the Richmond Center that needs to be done, and that was an extension was given to that, so it's due now May 15th, and they need a lot of this information in order to get that completed as well. Kevin didn't indicate to me when they would have the audit complete, but they knew they had to have this tax return done by the 15th of May. So that's kind of where we're sitting on that at this point in time.
Deb, I've heard rumblings, unofficial rumblings, and I just want to know if you're hearing any of the same things or if you can confirm this for me. I am hearing that in the middle of the financial issues that we've been dealing with the Richmond Center and CFR, to the point where I think this board approved up to $120,000 to help with some staff acquisition. I think 87 of it, 87,000 or so was used. But in the midst of all that, the management team of Richmond Center CFR were given substantial bonuses. Are you hearing any of that? Is there any truth to that you can verify? Where are we on that?
The asset administrative team has requested copies of board meeting minutes, and keep in mind the Richmond Center and CFR boards are merged boards. And it was in the January board meeting minutes, January of 12, where there was information from John Hostetler indicating that he had went ahead and approved staff bonuses in the amount of about $11,000. Realizing that needed board action, but because of the timing and him wanting to keep staff morale at a high level, he went ahead and approved those bonuses. And the board then discussed this at their January meeting and I believe went into closed session to discuss how to handle it. And told John, you know, this is something that does require board action. You should not have done this. Don't do it again in the future. It's kind of the gist of what was in the minutes.
Well, first of all, that doesn't sound like something you can go into closed session for. But my concern is we've got public dollars. We've got public dollars. The City of Ames has public dollars. United Way has their dollars that were invested in the Richmond Center for services to be provided, I don't feel like we've ever been given information. I feel like we're getting the runaround now. I mean, here we are almost 6 months late for an audit that was supposed to be here first of December, in December. I don't feel like we're getting anywhere. I don't think we're going to get anywhere. I absolutely think it's time for us to call the state auditor and ask them to come up here and meet with us and figure out what, if anything, we need to do to get to the bottom of this. I don't feel good about where things are. I don't think if we just continue to trust and rely on Richmond Center doing what they're supposed to do, what they say they're going to do, we're going to get anywhere. So I think I'm asking you guys. I would like for us to ask the state auditor to come up and meet with us and Deb and Gayla and invite Ames and invite United Way, and let's just talk this thing through and see what, if any, role the state auditor can play in helping us figure out where some of this money went.
Before we discuss or consider your proposal, Rick, let me ask this question. Based on the communication with Siemens in Houston that you had talked about, and the fact that there's a May 15th deadline for one of the other things, would it be in our best interest to give them a deadline that if the audit is not, information is not completed within 30 days, you know, then we will take action, whatever we deem appropriate, which in this case could very easily be calling the state auditor to see what steps need to be taken. I think if we don't put a deadline out there, chances are, you know, this thing can continue to go on for several months, way beyond what it needs to be, and I'm not sure that's in our best interest either. One side of me says let's move right away and consider Rick's proposal immediately, but at the same time, if the audit itself, now that we are designating moving into a new provider, and we are not appropriating any funds to the Richmond Center for this upcoming year and for the remainder of this year. Is that correct?
No, our contract for fiscal year 12 is still in effect.
Still in effect.
We just, but in we today's just claims, we have a February claim. We have not done March, April, May, June.
Correct.
We still got 4 months left to do. And Wayne, I'm more concerned about the dollars that we've already spent, not the dollars we will spend.
I understand.
And let me just be clear on what I'm suggesting we discuss. I'm not suggesting that we call for a full-blown state audit at this point or anything else. I'm suggesting that it is time for us as part of our responsibility to sit down with the state auditor and lay out what we know, what we have and don't have, and say, hey, you guys do this for a living. Tell us what we should be asking for. Tell us where we should be going. And I'm with you. If the Richmond Center gets it together and they want to provide us the information we need between now and the point that the state auditor takes a look at everything and says, yeah, here's where I think we need to go, then I'm fine with that. But as far as saying, well, if you don't give us this, we're going to call the state auditor, I'm ready to call the state auditor right now and say, hey, we just want to meet and talk about this. We want to tell you what we know, what we don't know. And then you tell us where we should be going from here.
And keep in mind, this audit, I mean, is from a year ago. I mean,
right.
So and we're quickly running into the end of fiscal year 12. So it's information that's already well over a year old that we're trying to collect. And like I said, I'm not exactly sure at this point in time where we would go with it or how we would use it because of how old it is and that we've moved on to using another provider. And I don't know, you know, what's going to happen then with the fiscal year 12 audit because those dollars are being spent as we speak as well. Again, it's in the asset policies and procedures that those agencies do provide audits and the timeline in which they are to do that. So we're still going to need a fiscal year 12 audit of some sort. And maybe the state auditor could give us direction on how to proceed with that as well.
Right. And Deb, I appreciate where you're coming from. I am not asking for us to investigate this thing based on what we're going to do in the future. I sit here and I am mortified of what we might find out is going on with Richmond Center and CFR and the dollars that we've invested in it through the years. But I'm more afraid of us not finding out and finding out sometime down the road, things happen that were completely inappropriate. And I'm not alleging anything. I'm just saying we don't know. They won't give us the information so that we can know what's going on. I hear the rumblings about what I see as completely inappropriate bonuses paid without proper authority. I mean, you start to hear about these things, and you just get concerned. And so, Deb, I'm not nearly as worried about what we're going to do with the information. I just want to find out what's
where
going on.
Where we are and what has happened. Yeah,
I think it's only responsible as being the three that are entrusted with a pretty large portion of the county taxpayers' money and the amount of money that we've given to the Richmond Center over the past few years. I have no confidence that any information we get from an audit from 2011 is going to be complete or accurate at all. And who's to say what we're going to get next year for an audit? So I'm in full agreement that it is time to sit down and have a conversation with the state auditor and let him know what our concerns are and what direction we're coming from.
Okay. He's here next week for a quarterly report.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think I would ask that we... I'll be glad to take this on if you guys deem it appropriate, that we contact the state auditor and we set up a meeting that involves us, Deb and Gayla, City of Ames invited, United Way invited, and we sit down, and I'm not asking for any kind of formal what we would do with it, but just have a conversation and lay out what we know.
Well, I think the fact that it's troubling us, and it has troubled us for some time, to do nothing appears inappropriate. And I think if this gives us some level of comfort in understanding what the parameters are, how we can proceed, how we can continue to endear the public trust, and how we take a look at how dollars are being spent that are there, and then I think this certainly clears a big hurdle that we've been dealing with for some time. So I certainly, even though I have some reluctance as to where it will go from here, I certainly would support moving forward in a similar manner to have that discussion.
Steve, do we need some kind of formal motion to do that, or are we just empowered to call for that? Okay.
Okay.
And I will add, in our administrative team conversations, the city and United Way have had some very light concerns about the delay of the audit and, you know, where things stand, why questions have not been answered. So I think they would be interested in participating in this conversation with the state auditor.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Deb.
Thanks, okay. Deb.
Thank you.
I'll be right back.
And so forth. Okay. All right, so as we move forward, we have discussion and consideration for final decision on the HSC space. Al Hahn, and we'll, huh? Well, I don't know if we can do five. I'll do 2.5 because there. We'll take about a 2-minute recess. We will reconvene after a short recess. And so the next item on the agenda is six. Discussion and consideration for final decision on the HFC space for the second floor. Al Hahn and Supervisor Sanders.
Yeah, I think my name's on it simply because I'm the one who said it's time for us to finally figure out. We've got Deb downstairs. We know exactly where VA is going. I believe we know that juvenile court services is staying right where we are. What we don't know at this point, based on informal conversations I've had, is exactly what's happening with the remainder of Deb's old space, and if a decision is made to move the county attorney into that open space, then what would happen with the current county attorney's area?
Sounds good. Okay. Al, take it away. Thank you. You have the map
there.
Here
it is.
Okay.
I have, we really don't know, we don't have a detailed plan. So, I mean, what we're doing right now is we're going to give gross area to people and how much space do people need. County attorney at the present time has 1,758 square feet where they're at. If they take the proposed area that's in green up there, they'll come up with almost 2,600 square feet. Is this something that, I mean, what's the board's...
Does the county attorney want to move now?
Too many mixed feelings that I get. That
but that's where we ended up last time.
Yes.
I remember last time pretty vividly.
Well, let me...
you can turn them on. We don't, yeah.
Steve Owen, County Attorney's Office. I want to thank the board for allowing us to kind of revisit this issue. You know, I know it was contentious, but you know, Mr. Holmes has kind of asked Teresa Smith and I to kind of reapproach the board and reapproach and revisit the situation. I think the answer to your question is yes. The additional space, I think, would give us the opportunity really to, we have an attorney who doesn't have an office right now. We have people doubled up in what used to be a conference room. So I think, you know, people have labored under some tight situations and done so appropriately over time. I think this would allow us to have more room, more potential for future. We, of course, have had file space issues. This would allow us to expand and really put people in some better working conditions. We'd certainly like to think the board might support future expansion of the fine recovery program. Current numbers as of the end of April were that program had generated $771,000 in collected fines for this current fiscal year. That's also $63,000 in victim restitution. That program continues to grow. But we do see at some point in other counties that have entered into that sort of program realize that we currently have two people and that the program will peak at some point. It's a labor-intensive type program, and that means that we would be looking to expand that in the future. I think the space that we would be vacating would be excellent space for use. I know that the DHS is their DCAT, the empowerment folks are looking for space. It's a beautiful space up there. I know you've all been there. They're beautiful offices, frankly. I have no desire to give up really what is a pretty darn nice office, but I think we're just going to have to. I know at one point we talked, too, about using the current waiting room and secretary and fine recovery space. It's kind of that left-hand three spaces there as a potential other conference room for that building. I know if you're in that building, the large conference room on the west side is booked almost pretty solidly right now. We have a general election coming this year. I know there are health clinics held in there. I sit on legal aid board. We used to have our meetings in there. We moved them to Northcrest just to give one of our board members who lives there more access to attending the meetings, but I presume we'll probably be back there. There's a lot of community groups like that use that room. And so an additional conference room for the public, for people who are using that building, I think would be a great benefit. This leaves juvenile court services where they're at. I think that they are appreciative of that. Brett has his space there, and I'm colorblind. I'm going to guess that's a kind of a light blue down in the southwest corner. I'm fairly positive he's happy with that situation. So, you know, this would allow us to have a small entrance off that hallway that we feel is it would be more than adequate for the fine recovery folks and as a general entrance. It would also give us back a conference room, which we don't currently have, and again, why we find some pinch in having to share that conference room with everyone else and why we're aware of how much it is, in fact, used. So I think there are some tremendous advantages. This would be a nice county space for county offices. It would open up some very deluxe space for those who offer county or who offer services to county residents, and would also allow some additional, perhaps if the board were to choose this, some additional conference space that could be utilized by the public as well as people that office in that building. So with that said, I probably rambled on long enough, and I do appreciate the board's consideration of this allocation space.
assuming that we would approve the final plan as laid out here, there is no timetable, though, as far as the shift from the county attorney's current space into this, because there still has to be some configurations and some other things done. Rick, do you have any idea, is there a timetable for the Empowerment DCAT office space needs?
July 1st.
July 1st.
As an outside date, yeah. With the transition that's going on there right now, we've got one person who is both DCAT and Empowerment. She is housed in a cubicle in DHS currently. As you guys are aware, we have really pushed DHS back into the area. They are truly on top of each other. And with that Empowerment DCAT position going to two positions, there's an increased need for space. So my two questions were dollars and timing. I think right in line, Wayne, with where you are. I assume, Steve, you don't just want the space as it sits. There would need to be some renovation done.
That's true.
And so I want to know where that money would come from. And then the second part to that is timing, Wayne. As you pointed out, when would we be able to start shifting some of the things around that we need to shift around?
We put $50,000 in next year's budget for this. Not a lot of money, but that money really isn't available to us until July. And really, if you talk to Lisa, it's probably not really available to us until September. But starting that project, there's no way we can get it done by the 1st of July.
There's absolutely
no way.
When we left our last meeting, the intention was to send the DCAT and Empowerment up into the two offices that exist right next to Veterans Affairs right now,
right.
And that was a much easier move. This, I see the value in the space for the county attorney. I work hard to not hold grudges over things that have happened in the past, and so you know I'm trying hard to get to all that, but now I've got to reconcile in my mind how we're going to do it, and the fact that $50,000 is not going to be anywhere close to doing what would need to be done for that to be ready for the county attorney. So I think, Steve, generally I'm favorable. I just got a couple questions that I need to address. I don't know if the county attorney's portion of the fine recovery money that you guys are doing such a great job bringing in is something that could be utilized to do some of that build out, but then I get into timing and how that transition works. How could we potentially free up a couple offices where you guys currently are and set up for, because as I see it right now, it'd be great to have the conference room, but that can wait. It would be great to have what I consider the four offices and open area down there on the east end of the building, but what we really need is two of them if we're going to start making the transition.
Right.
And so is there a way to start to stack this thing up where we can do the things we need to do mm-hmm. to get this thing ready?
Yeah, I guess I'd leave it to Al. You know, you're talking about two offices for sure. That
we need two offices as soon as we can get them.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, it seems to make sense then that, you know, we're talking about two offices on that. Is it the south side there of our, you know, one of them is mine and one of them is Amy's. You know, I'll just throw myself out there. You know, if you need to kick me out and put me in some of that green space, I need a desk, a computer, and a phone to operate. So
you aren't going to be around. You don't want to be around us when we're going to rip
up. When you're working, when you're working, that's the problem.
You can't be in that area. And we don't even know what we're going to do in that area yet. We don't know how many closed offices we need. We don't know how many walls we've got to remove, all that.
Is there an opportunity to move a couple people over into this building in what used to be the health area?
As far as I'm concerned,
asking,
yeah.
I'm asking the question.
As far as I'm concerned, yes. I mean, the services are there, the computers are there, everything, but that would have to be county attorney's call if they wanted them over here.
Yeah, I would think if the county attorney wants that new space, that the county attorney will be willing to work with us in making that happen, would be my gut feel, Al. I mean, I'm with you that ultimately it's his decision, but gut feel?
I don't think we have to rush the... implementation, I think we have to, if we decide that we like the concept, then it would, we can empower you, Al, to work with the county attorney and others to decide how we can, you know, move this process forward. The other question that comes is, the fine recovery dollars currently right now is deposited in the general fund, I believe.
80%.
80% of it, that we, of the dollars that we receive. And so those dollars have not necessarily been designated to just specific use by the county attorney per se. That is always something that he has been able to come back to us at a given time and suggest that we could use those for that. So I think that it has some potential.
Well, I think it's two separate pots of money that you're talking about, Alan. Right. I mean, Wayne, and I want to make sure we're clear. As I understand it, and I'd ask Teresa to weigh in on this, as I understand the fines recovery, when we get to a certain level, 80% of it goes into the general fund and 20% of it remains with the county attorney.
This is kind of a complicated process. Let me see if I can, for the record and for everybody's edification here, clear this up. That we get the county... gets, and I have to think about it now myself, is that you get a pot of money that we collect, and of what we collect, the county gets 40%. Once we hit the threshold, which is based on population, so for Story County, once we hit 250,000, which we did at the end of January of this year, then the county attorney gets an additional 20%, but that's of the state's money. So the county continues to get 40%
of what you collect goes into the general fund. Once you hit the 250, there's an additional 20% that remains with the county attorney.
Right, and that 20% goes to the county attorney for the remainder of the fiscal year. When the fiscal year flips over, then we're back to zero. We have to hit threshold again.
And you said, I thought I heard you say something like 770,000 so
now,
far.
Yes. Now, understand, that's total collective. That is total collective.
Right. So as I'm hearing what you're saying, just to make sure I'm getting it, 40% of that full 770 is going to the general fund of Story County.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Because of how it's collected, when it's collected, and when it starts rolling in. So some of that money may actually roll in after the beginning of the fiscal year.
Okay.
So this has been part of my difficulty too, Rick, in understanding.
Ultimately, whether it spills from one fiscal year to another, when every dollar we collect, 40 cents of it comes to the general fund.
No. No, we don't. No, this is total collected. We only get a percentage of that. We get the fines, the fees, and the court costs, but there are sheriff's fees, there are other fees that get imposed by the court. So when I say total, that's the total that we have collected. I would have to look, honestly, and I don't want to mislead you on this, have to look and see what our county share would be. With 771 total, I can guarantee you that the largest numbers of what is collected are the fines, fees, and costs. So I would estimate that it is well over 600,000 and probably closer to 7.
Okay.
Well, I would be in favor of designating what is green up there on the screen for county attorney, pending figuring out how to pay for what the county attorney is going to want to do with it, because I'm not convinced there's dollars there. But that has to be contingent upon the county attorney freeing up what I consider to be the southeast corner of his current offices, which would be, Steve, those two, the one office you're in and the other office, that entryway right there, and Al, you being able to go in and put in some kind of doorway separation.
You're talking there. Right there.
Right there. Right. Yep. So that in my mind, Empowerment DCAT would use that door in the stairwell in order to access their offices. They would get those two offices right there as soon as reasonably possible prior to July 1st, and that then we've got to find a space as we displace people out of the county attorney's office. We've got to find space for them until the green area is ready to go.
That
when we go in and do remodeling there, we're going to have to get the approval of the fire marshal. We're going to have to get approval of an architect, and there's some fire exits that we're going to have to put in here get these people out this way through that lobby area. So we are going to have some architectural fees that we'll have to withstand. Also, we're going to have to put this back on our CAD system, just like we did the basement where Deb moved into. So that's going to add to the fees. So
the $50,000
is gone. I mean, it's going to go in a hurry.
That's what I'm saying. The $50,000 that we have budgeted would help get us through the architectural, the putting it on the CAD.
Yes.
Anything that we would have to do to get those two offices done.
These two? There. Absolutely, yes.
So, and then it becomes a function of we've got to identify dollars,
right.
But then the timing gets a little easier as long as you get, I mean, you know, I know Stephen was worried about being in three different locations. As I see it, this is going to put you guys in three different locations.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least temporarily.
Probably.
Temporarily. Well, but I don't know how temporary it is.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Because when we find the dollars.
Teresa has some numbers here for me. I guess I just want to make sure the record's clear. Right. And again, we budgeted for this year in the general fund that fine recovery would have $120,000. We're actually, it looks like a pretty solid estimate of $200,000. So I know that's not a tremendous amount of money, but it's $200,000. So,
well, we had talked about designating that excess for building improvements, you know, at one
right.
time.
Right.
And we've never really specifically done that. And I think we have met our revenue budgeted amount. Or bringing in what we've brought in?
Sure. We don't know that yet for next fiscal year. Do you remember what we budgeted to bring in for FY13?
I think we left it at $200,000.
Yeah, so it's something we should be able to hit, but that $200,000 is already money that in the bathtub approach, it's going into the bathtub that is the general fund, and we're draining it off, you know, 27 different directions. So it would be the in addition to that I would view as dollars that would be appropriate to use in something like this, or we go identify other dollars.
Well, I think it's if we have learned anything, when we started with the remodeling and moving Deb, that just didn't happen in a couple months. That takes quite a bit of planning and preparation and so forth. So for us to assume that this could be something done within 3 to 90 days is probably unrealistic as we kind of factor all that. So I think the board could go ahead and approve looking at this space based on the caveats that you put there. Which is not finalizing us doing anything until we know that we have the finances available to do so and a reasonable time frame for getting it done. But in the meantime, what you need to consider with Stephen as a county attorney is the temporary relocation of some of your staff if you want us to move forward with this. I think that's really going to be the key. If you're willing to do that with the space that is in this current building right now, this allows us to do that. Now, that may not have to happen right immediately within the next week, but I think it's got to be something that, in working with Al, that you've got to figure in when this could take place. But I think as soon as we could get the two office areas for the empowerment and DCAT with whatever access that has to have there, that needs to be our number one priority, I would think.
That area back there, we're probably going to just put a wall clear across there, but what I can see now is that we're going to have, just like we did in the dental clinic, we've got to use that door there for fire egress.
Right.
And it's going to be a door for their entrance also, but we have to give county attorney a way through there to get down that stair tower. So what we did in the dental clinic, between dental clinic and DHS, we put in a door that was activated by the fire alarm system only, so we would probably do the same thing.
Could we do the same thing with VA in that way? Or are we going to do the same thing?
No, but we will hear for county attorney.
Okay, so you just built a wall right there for VA?
We are going to, yeah.
Going to build.
Yeah, actually what we're going to do is, see that second line where my pointer's on? That's actually going to be the wall. And we're going to give county attorney and we're going to give VA an area for storage right there, built-in storage cabinets. So, okay. Because the area is pretty much useless if we just go across and... But we have to have a door in there. So that's going to lay out a little different how these offices here, and I'm assuming that they're going to want private offices here or maybe a conference room here, make this a workroom or something. I mean, that's all up in the air. That's what I was talking about. You know, that's got to happen with...
Seems to me that if we were to put together some kind of plan, if this were to all go forward and the county attorney were to say, yeah, I want the green space there, and ultimately we're going to leave the southern part of that green space pretty much alone. Yeah, these are the offices we want, and there's the little conference room. Then it just becomes a matter of you getting in there and recarpeting and painting,
right.
And then we could almost build a little temporary wall so then they could start coming in there. We could build a little temporary wall where you're working on the northern part, whatever it looks like. I mean, it may be a three-step process to try to get something like this done.
That's going to be the entrance to the county attorney's office, and I've already talked with Steve a little bit about this, and what we're looking at, you know, is putting a county or a counter in there so that you get fine recovery right there.
Good.
Then possibly a door here that would lead into the county attorney's office. But visitors and people paying their fines would not go any further than that little point right there.
Okay. Is this a lot of this stuff that you guys can do, your staff or not?
We can do some of it until we get into moving walls. I'm not a structural engineer. We'll need that stamp.
Building walls you can do?
Building walls we can do. Moving walls I cannot. I cannot move them unless I get an engineer in there. So,
well, Steve, I would encourage you to take back to the county attorney that cost is going to be a major issue. So the fewer walls that we move, if we're just building walls,
right.
If we're just putting in new carpet and building walls and maybe cutting a window, you know, those kind of things, I think that's going to reduce the cost, is going to reduce the time, work out a way to make the transition. You guys give up the office that you're in and the other one as soon as possible so that Al could get in there. And like I say, consider all options, and in my mind, including the old environmental health area down there on a temporary basis, and see if we can put this thing together. But that's what I'm going to recommend the direction we move.
Well, probably the most important item in this whole thing happened when Rick said that he would be glad to be the lead person for the board in working with you, Al, and the county attorney in putting this together. And so that relieves a lot of additional headache for me, and I'm happy that you're willing to
piss
on.
I'll just say, the reason that I am most interested in this is I have never come up with a good use for that northern part of the green section. I couldn't, as we were going down this, that was going to become basically unused, underutilized space.
Right.
And as I see it now, the highest and best use for just the green area, based on what we need, is definitely county attorney, as I see it. I don't know how we get there yet. I don't know how we pay for it yet. I view DCAT and Empowerment going down onto that southeast corner of the building as a perfect spot. I really like the idea of having another full conference room in that building, as we discussed, right in there. And then that still gives us two extra offices that we don't know what, the kind of overflow offices that I would suggest we hold on to tightly for a while until we figure out how all this shakes out. So in terms of highest and best use based on what's available, I think this is the way to go. We just got to find a way to get there, and it's going to demand great flexibility from the county attorney's office for us to be able to get it done.
We've actually got three good areas there. By moving this doorway back a little bit, this would become a hallway. You could have a doorway right there, incorporate this whole area, plus your conference room there, plus DCAT there. So you got pretty good square footage there.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I think the consensus of the board would be to go ahead and continue to move forward with the allocation of the space as you've kind of outlined here and work keep Rick involved in this as we move forward, and we'll be waiting to hear back, and I'm sure Rick will be waiting to hear back from the discussion with the county attorney regarding, you know, whether or not this is feasible, or if he says no, we'll just stay where we are. We'll stay where we are and just find a couple office spaces for DCAT and Empowerment, and it'll be done.
Satellite office for Wayne.
And satellite office, yeah.
That's what Wayne was counting on for that northern space of the green right there.
So what I hear, what I hear you saying is these, if the county attorney says no, you're saying that possibly these would then become DCAP, or do you want us to go ahead and start moving on putting DCAP back here?
Yeah, I would suggest that this week we need to know
what
the county attorney wants us to do, and whether we've got the flexibility to move on those offices currently occupied by you and others in the county attorney's office. And if the answer there is yes, and it becomes simply a function of figuring out what the green space needs to look like and what that's going to cost us and how we're going to pay for it, then I would suggest we move ahead. If the answer to that is no, then I'm going to push Al really hard for us to get in as quick as we can and start to get those two areas ready for DCAT empowerment.
All right. Okay. Sounds good.
I want you to put that in a motion.
All that, yeah. So, I move that we proceed with an offer to the county attorney to work with us on the reallocation of the available space in the Human Services Building, and would suggest that I be the board liaison to work with Al, Steve Owen, and Steve Holmes to see if we can put it all together in a timely fashion.
I'll second it.
Been moved and second that we follow Rick's suggestion. I will not try to repeat it all verbatim. It is well documented. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you.
Now set a new record, by the way, for this board.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Next item, discussion of paving projects, 590th, 600th Avenue, Grand Avenue, continuation of the ongoing discussion. Darren Moon, County Engineer.
Thank you.
I'm going to have to send somebody out to get a sandwich here before long.
Good afternoon.
Darren, how you doing?
Just continuing our discussion we've had the past few weeks on these two paving projects. You had three specific questions you had for me. The first was, what are the current road improvements plan by the city of Nevada for the DuPont plant? The city actually hired a consultant to do a traffic analysis of this whole area for both the DuPont plant, which is right here, and then they had two other developments out here off of 18th Street. The circles are the intersections that they studied. In general, the study came back with very little impact, almost zero impact on 590th and 600th for additional traffic. Did not warrant turn lanes here, left turn lanes, but my recent discussion with the city says they are still going to move forward with that. The city did get a $600,000 RISE grant from the state. Half of that was actually out of the county pool. There's two pools, a county pool and a city pool, and so it was half and half. Some of that had to do with the fact that 590th north of Lincoln Way right here is half city and half county, so I think they gave them some county funds for that because of that. It's difficult to see the layout here, but this really only shows right turn lanes in here now, but the city has planned left turn lanes. Essentially, this intersection is going to look identical to 600th Avenue that has left turn lanes also. So that is what is planned. And
so that would do away with the entrance that is between 600th and 590th right now?
No. 600th and that one you're referring to will not change. There is no changes planned for either one of those.
And that's the one they're not supposed to make a left turn.
Correct.
Coming from the west off of Lincoln Way.
Yeah.
Okay.
In talking with the city and the developer, they both anticipate any traffic we see on a gravel road from here will more likely be on 590th, but should be pretty minimal what they plan on now, but things could change.
Plan on running the continuing the access road clear over to 590th or not?
They aren't sure if the developer's going to do that, but that was the plan. Looks like they offset it a little bit now. I think the access road is about in here somewhere. So that is unclear on if that's going to come through, but that was the plan. So the city's going to pave this stretch with the RISE funds and the turn lane improvements with some of the RISE funds. Like I said, no change to 600 at the other entrance. As part of this traffic analysis, the DOT is going to, at 580th, they are going to add on to the left turn lane. There's already one there, but it's pretty short, so they're going to make it longer and add right turn lanes, but that doesn't really have much to do with this. So the DOT is going to do that. I think this stretch is next year, so that'll happen next year. But the big thing to take out of this is 580th and Lincoln Way. The report did recommend right and left turn lane warrants at this intersection, and that's still currently all county. That is something that's been on my radar for a number of years, but this is going to probably move that up to the forefront and be in my wish list at least for next construction program discussions. I know there's been a lot of talk of City of Ames annexing out here, so that might have an impact on what we do, but we need to start looking at that. Construction timeline for the improvements here at 590th is 1.5 to 2 years. 2014 is the latest. We're going to shoot for fall of 2013. Any other questions about the plans in this area? I point out, too, over here in the city of Nevada, the current interchange has just an overpass over Highway 30 here, and I think the city is really relooking at that because that's where we had real concerns. If they put an overpass and there's no access to Airport Road anymore, that would push more traffic over to 600. But I really think the city's, especially with this development going in, not allowing them access to 30, I don't think is a real option.
Changes Airport Road.
That's where we stand with the traffic study and the future plans for turn lanes. Your other question revolved around, well, the other two are available funding and how that would affect other projects. So those two are kind of tied together. Sorry, Rick, it's kind of small again.
Yeah. Another one.
I'll have to read this for you because that is much, much smaller than I anticipated. What this is shows our projects in the middle here, and these are our balances, the important thing, our FM balance. Let me go back a couple slides here first. 590th, just a reminder, went through this before. To pave 590th, these were our options we came up with for possible funds.
Right.
TIF, Farnham Market, and general. So Farnham Market was the realistic option. So that's what I'm addressing here is where our Farnham Market funds are if you were to use that to pave either 590th or 600. Red means we're in negative numbers. January 2012 is about where we are here. We're in the negative 300,000 range right now. Already let these two projects, E18 Box and Shipley Roads, already let. That's going to get constructed this fall. So we're in the negative numbers. We get positive beginning of next year, and we have another massive projects here. You see bridges here. They're matched with Farnham Market funds, so they're kind of tied to the federal aid funds. And the big projects, North Dakota, $750,000, and that's kind of a maximum. That may come in considerably less depending on how the design goes. But
all right, so I read the July. What is the July where we get out of red funds? July of what? Down further. Keep going.
Way down here?
Yep.
That's 2015.
Right there. Okay. So July of 2014 is where we, based on the fact that we don't have any plans out there, we get back in the black until we start making some plans.
Yeah. And this doesn't really address, I've got those two wish lists. I think next year we spend more time on prioritizing that wish list because we haven't stuck a lot of that stuff in here.
Right.
Because I don't know what the priorities are at this point. So there could be things that go in there. So, Wayne, to answer your question, what would get thrown out? It's more of those wish list items that we haven't put in here already wouldn't be put in then at all.
Any of the farm-to-market projects that you've got on there that reasonable to delay, or are all those projects things that we've put off and put off?
These are, yeah, essentially ones that need to be done. They're in the five-year program now. I don't see a major cost savings anywhere, one that could be delayed.
Well, first of all, I would say I really appreciate you continuing to work on this, and we've still got more to go, but I appreciate the information you brought us. I think that that road study that was done by Nevada, I really appreciated. Nancy, I appreciated getting that and being able to read through it. It takes me back to the fact that 600th is not intended to be a major thoroughfare. It's just not. Nobody. DOT doesn't look at it as a major thoroughfare. City of Nevada is not looking at it as a major thoroughfare. It just happens to be being used right now as a major thoroughfare because it's the most direct route back to the ethanol plant and the co-op. And so this brings me to, and Paul, you're going to hate this one, but I think it's time for us to have a conversation about closing 600th somewhere along that line, and I know that that hits a couple of our farmers that live to the south that want to bring equipment up there. It's going to force them to go to 590th or to Airport Road. And I'm not suggesting that we take action to go ahead and do it, but what I am suggesting is I think it's time for us to have a public meeting to receive public input on the possibility of doing this, because I can't find a way. I completely agree with Nancy that the truck traffic on 600th right now is more than anybody anticipated or, frankly, even wants to recognize. And to me, there's only a couple options for dealing with that. Either you recognize that 600th is going to be a major thoroughfare, or we take steps to make sure it's not. And the only one I can think of to make sure it's not is close the road at some point. I mean, in my mind, I've been thinking about closing it right at 30 because I think long-term DOT does not see 600th as having access to 30. I mean, I think that's 15 years down the road. Having access to 30, I've heard others suggest that maybe closing it in the middle at this point and letting the people who live on the south end come out to 30 and people who live on the north end go to Lincoln Way. I think that's short term. Again, if you look at DOT, eventually is not going to want that road to access 30. But I'm asking us to think about what the steps are to have the conversation of closing 600th. And Darren, you start to put that together for us. I haven't seen Sally Jensen in a while. That'd be a good reason for Sally to come visit with us and go from there.
I think from Darren's standpoint, you'd almost have to close it at one end or the other. You're still going to have to maintain it, and in order for you guys to, I mean, it'd be a nightmare to close it in the middle and have your guys go down there with a maintainer and have to turn around and come back and then come back from the other end to finish the south end of it, but.
Well, nothing hurts having the discussion and looking at all options on the table. I know to the concept of closing a road it's going to inconvenience some folks. And so the people really that it will be impacted, the residents in that area, really need to speak volumes to us in terms of how they view that. And then what access that would be basically available, because this is not quite the same as if we would have a Class C road in which they have a gate, but in reality you'd almost have to have it some way to have it closed off, otherwise people are going to continue to come down it, trucks are going to come down it, so you've got to have some type of barricade there.
You'd probably just put an old outlet sign, but
that's not enough.
If trucks go there, they have a difficult time getting turned around. Coming off,
you close it at one end or the other.
Yeah.
I promise a truck wouldn't go down it more than once if it was closed. That's right. You might have to back up a mile.
I would agree that we need to have a public discussion and notify as many people as we possibly can that it's going to affect. I mean, there's a lot of. Trucking companies are not going to make very happy if you close that road, but
yeah, and I guess I would have some issues with that. Essentially, why we're able to maintain this road fine. So essentially, the only reason we're closing is for dust control. We have roads out. We have one road that has over 1,000 vehicles a day traffic count. How do you compare that to this?
Well, and
that's
my question,
difficulty.
Yeah, that may be compared, and I appreciate your engineer's mind of putting those things in category. My question there would be, is there a reasonable alternative to that? Because I view, and I may be wrong, but I view the use of Airport Road, which is paved, 590th, which is now going to be a quarter paved, and ultimately 580th, which is paved, as reasonable alternatives. Yes, it could cause somebody a little, it could make Nancy have to go north to go back south, to get out of her house. Right now it's pretty easy to, you know, just take off and go south and hit 30 and go. But that's the trade-off if in fact we feel like 600th is not intended to have this amount of traffic. And like I say, I just think it's time to have the conversation.
Yeah, I guess if nobody shows up and cares that it's closed, it'd be an option.
Yeah.
I agree with you that we need to get as much input as possible before we make any decision on whether to close or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's time for an evening meeting. I mean, I think this would be one of our 6:30, 7 p.m. meetings. And we just see who comes. What kind of time frame do we need? My problem right now is I can't commit to anything in early June, knowing what I've got going on. I just don't know what my schedule is going to be like right then. But I don't know if we need that much time out in order to set a meeting like this.
I would suggest we wait until the planning season's over, because that's who you're going to affect.
Give them an opportunity to get here.
I would move it till sometime in midsummer. That way they're done with what they need to do this spring, and they're not gearing up for the fall yet. That way nobody's going to have the excuse that, well, you set this meeting during planting or harvest season so we couldn't come. I've heard that once before. So
yeah. So you're talking about getting to the middle of July.
Yeah.
Darren, can we start moving on setting an evening meeting to discuss specifically closing 600th for the middle of July?
Do that and start thinking about what that range is you want letters sent out to. But I can work with you on getting the date set.
Just avoid the week of the July 11th and the following through the 18th. Just avoid that week. Well, those two can handle it. I just won't be here.
We're going to make sure Clinton's here when we have the meeting.
Yeah, I won't be here for that.
Sure.
Yeah. And second. Okay. And so, hearing no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you, Darren.
Thanks, Darren.
Okay, anything else on any of the others as yet? We're still, we have not, Grant and or Gritton and so forth, we still just kind of in limbo. I had one person approach me and ask this question, and that is whether or not funding that we would need would also be taking away from use of bridge repair.
Oh, definitely. That kind of all goes back to Rick's comment last meeting, is you need to decide how you want to use the TIF funds, because that one's pretty much TIF funds for nothing, because we don't.
I think that's on me and Steve Owen's plate. Didn't we kind of give that to me and Steve Owen to start to come up with a process?
Yes, we did.
We haven't had anything else going on.
How big is that plate?
Go ahead.
So if you use TIF funds, whether or not that's taken away from bridge, it depends if you were planning on using TIF funds for bridge repairs. So.
Well, I think it was included in that originally. Infrastructure, roads and bridges were included in there. So, okay. All right.
Thanks, Darren.
Good. All righty.
That didn't take. We get extra space for you guys, and now you need extra help? How'd you get that on there?
Item 7, 8, actually. Discussion and consideration of addition of a part-time administrative support position.
Remember that comment about how big is that plate?
That's true. Yeah.
We're back to that. Teresa Smith, Story County Attorney's Office. And we had discussions in the budget work session about some money that I was hoping to move around from extra work line. It
it was paying for interns that we were doing, victim witness interns. And I was kind of hoping to use it for something different, but every time I'm finding myself having to help Stephen with one of us, I'm creating bigger fires trying to put out his fire. And his fire is getting pretty big. So we're asking to, I've discussed it with Alyssa, and Alyssa was suggesting to me that we start out as a part-time to make sure that it's going to be the administrative side that Stephen's really going to need and not the additional attorney side that he will need. And I agreed with her that that's probably the cheapest and easiest place to start to help him. So I guess I'm just looking for guidance or
let's open up
questions.
His mailbox.
What was that?
Open up his email box and his phone
mail. Yes. And
hey, yes, let's not go there because I'm kind of guilty of that, too. Mine gets full.
I keep it empty daily, and it's just overtaking me. So I'm just having a difficult time just keeping up. You know, I've gone 4 years without any administrative support whatsoever. I've done my best, but the tsunami has hit, and I can't do it anymore. I've done my best. I hope you appreciate it. I hate asking for help. It's not in my nature, but I'm just there.
Yeah, to me, this is a no brainer. I mean, what we've got going on the civil side, and what we see coming. I mean, the questions that we're getting 8 ways from Sunday that all flow through Stephen. It's a no brainer for me. We've got to find a way to pay for it. And as I understand, you feel pretty good about the next fiscal year of what we've got budgeted that this can build in. It's the remainder of this year that you're worried about. Is that accurate?
Actually, I think by the time we advertise it, we're going to be
starting
on
next
the new
year.
Fiscal year.
So
anyway.
Then it becomes a space issue, which we're going to work on that as part of the other items. And Stephen, I'll ask you this. I've mentioned it a couple times. I've mentioned it to County Attorney Holmes. My concern. Your plate is we keep referring to this plate. Just in civil stuff, we've got your plate completely full, and yet I keep feeling you getting yanked in the other direction as well. Not recently, but I keep feeling you getting yanked in the other direction as well to help out when, I mean, clearly we got huge caseloads on the other side. And
I have to admit responsibility for being too willing to jump in where I think help is needed. And I have to quit doing that, too.
And that's what I'm going to ask for. If we're allocating additional resources to it, the first thing that's going to be important to me is that we know, and I know you're given 120%, so it's not fair to say just 100% of your time, that all of your time is, in fact, dedicated to the civil side that we have going
on. And that's right. And I'm hearing that, and I understand the importance that the board places on this. And so I'm here to tell you I bear some of the responsibility. It hasn't been the county attorney who said, oh, Steve, I need you here and there. It's, you know, we sit in a staff meeting every Friday, and somebody needs some help, and I'm just the idiot who raises his hand sometimes when I should. So, I'm hearing
that's not a bad quality, though.
Well, I'm hearing what you're saying, and I enjoy the civil work. That's what I'm being tasked with, and the prosecutor in me gets the better of me sometimes. So, but I hear what you're saying.
Okay, so let's move on and consider the option. Do I entertain a motion for the addition of a part-time administrative support position?
Yeah, I'd move the addition of part-time administrative support for our civil counsel.
Second.
It's been moved and second to approve the addition of a part-time administrative support position assigned to civil counsel. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay. Whew. Agency reports, child serve. You're still here.
Rachel, I hope you didn't have anything on your plate today.
Well, I'm just hoping this.
I'll try to make it quick.
Okay.
So I'm here to report on ChildServe. I'm the Ames Program Manager for the nonprofit agency out on Dayton Road. We have 4 core services there at ChildServe that we provide to the community. And I'd like to add that it's not just the Story County community, but we're also serving about 18 other counties. So just so you guys kind of have an idea. Again, we have four core services. We have our child care service, which is an integrated child care. We serve up to our capacity is 116 children, and we are currently running the child care at 112, so we don't have much room there in our child care system. About 10% of those children have a special health care need, and about 10% are receiving asset funds.
In the 112, any guess what percentage of those are Story County, knowing that you serve 18 other counties?
All of them in our asset program are in the Story County.
So that's 10%, so 11 or 12 of those kids. I was asking, the 112, is that fully Story County kids?
No. You'll see outside counties there. Mainly Polk County people that live in Ames but work or live in Ankeny. Usually, that are coming in to work in Ames.
Yep.
Our next service is our outpatient therapy. Our outpatient therapy program has grown significantly over the years. In 2007, we opened a wing strictly for our therapy services. We currently serve about 85 children a day in our outpatient therapy. And we can continue to see an increase in that 0 to 5 range of children. So great need in this county for those services and surrounding counties, because we have people that come from Carroll, Marshalltown, Webster City to come for therapy services. I'm trying to think. We have about 11 therapists, outpatient or occupational therapy, physical therapy, and our speech therapy services. Our other two programs are our respite care. Again, we provide respite care 4 weekends a month at our site in Ames. We also do that at our Polk County location as well. Again, a real need for respite services. We continue to see an increase in those services as well in the area. And our last program is our supported community living program. Again, it's a skill building program to help children learn how to live on their own. We set goals for those children, and we're working with them in the community on skills. So those are the 4 programs that we provide at our Ames location. We have, I think, 14 core services out of our Polk County location, but again, those are the 4 that were the highest need in Story County area. Strategically, what our organization is working on is accreditation. The Ames site went through the CARF accreditation recently in March. We should hear any time what our accreditation is. But we became accredited in our respite program and our supported community living programs. And we're looking for expanding that this next fiscal year, which starts July 1st with our outpatient therapy program. The child care program is already accredited through the Department of Human Services quality rating scale, which we have the highest level of a 5. We have to resubmit that application here this summer, so hopefully we'll be able to continue to provide that level 5 QRS rating. So, other areas that we're focusing in is specialized care. Looking at providing more specialized care in our child care center. Again, we're at the exploration stage, trying to figure out how to bring that to the Story County area and to determine the need for that service in the area. That specialized care is funded through state funds and federal funds. So that's typically how that service is funded. We've never explored asset in trying to provide that specialized care at this time in our child care. Right now, we're just exploring other options. Another initiative is our positive behavior support initiative. We're working on standardizing what we feel that is in the state of Iowa to reduce behaviors and be able to serve more children that display some of those things. We've worked with Polk County Behavior Support Academy. We've also worked with Iowa State Extension on providing positive behavior support in our child care center. We're taking some of those things and trying to standardize them throughout our organization is another initiative. And the last one I wanted to discuss was autism. There's a high need. We have increasing numbers in the area of autism. Again, we're exploring. We have not implemented anything in that area as of yet, but we are exploring autism. What is it the families are needing? We're trying to develop a comprehensive program where we can provide the families with more support and training. We're already serving children with autism, but we're just trying to support them more. So that's kind of the area we're looking at partnering with the University of Iowa right now to try to develop some clinics where we can house the clinic at our Polk County location. So children and families don't have to travel all the way to the University of Iowa. So we're looking at bringing doctors in to diagnose and to screen children in their local area. So that's kind of where we're at and where we're moving.
Great. Well, and thank you for your efforts in this area and the programs that it's provided, because this is, again, very important to the working parents. And so we appreciate what you do.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Darren, as we move on, can you be brief, or do you want to wait until next week?
Try to be brief.
Okay. Departmental report, county engineer.
Okay. Well, it's been a couple months since I reported last to the board, but I wanted to comment on what an excellent spring we've had, dry conditions. It's been one of the best I can ever remember as far as the gravel road conditions, and very few frost boils out there, so it's kind of nice to put rock down on a road that's in decent shape to improve it rather than put rock in mud holes and potentially lose the rock. We did have two instances, kind of a flash flood situation down in the southeast corner of the county a couple weeks ago. It caused quite a bit of silting into the ditches, so that'll require some work. And then the windstorm really only had stagecoach. We had two major trees down that kind of closed that for the entire day. But that was about it. This allowed our motor grader operators to concentrate more on improving our roads. We're trying to stress to them, they're not just there to maintain it. We're trying to stress, let's improve it while we're out there. This is a sketch from maintenance and attendance made up so they can have handouts in the vehicles, because some of these improvements we're doing has caused some comments from the public. Once we explain it to them, they're fine with it. But here's a gravel road, good slope to it, the water runs off. This is what we want to see. Over time, it flattens out. We're not able to afford rock to keep pushing it up. It's estimated you lose 100 to 200 tons a year of rock just from traffic and maintenance. This happens, so what our motor graders try to do is blade that crown back in it, and what it does, it leaves this edge over here. So what we're doing now, more than we've ever done in the past, we're going out and taking this edge off. A lot of this is rock, and they're here anyway, so we blade that material back up. It looks terrible when you do it, because all the vegetation out here. But that's why we get the comments. Once we explain it to people, people are like, been out here 30 years. What, more gear doesn't always do on it. This is what's happening. So if you get those comments, once we explain to them we're trying to improve the situation, they understand. Just finished up our contract rock hauling in the southwest corner of the county, the green lines here. Only one, 600 we actually took off because we put the millings on that instead. So we did it. Some additional roads in this area. And then our crews, this cost about $450,000, just to give you an idea, rock and hauling. So our crews took off from there and hauled a lot of this area, also in preparation for the Highway 69 closure. So we've got some rock on these side roads to prepare for that. Latest we've heard from the DOT is that this could happen late May. From E18 down to what we call Moose Road 190th, that will be closed for, I think, a couple months. That's going to put a lot of stress on our gravel roads. The official detour is over to the interstate and back down. We hope most people use that. There isn't a lot of other good options. We're going to get some dust control complaints. since it is not the DOT's official detour route, DOT probably will not participate in those costs, so it's going to be a struggle. We are going to get our bridge right up here at E18 finished up, hopefully open this Friday, so that'll take some of the pressure off and get some traffic over here. We had such a dry spring, so we did have to dust control spots a mile north and south because, there wasn't a good detour route for it, so a lot of traffic took the gravel. So we already have these 2 miles dust controlled. A couple pictures of E18 bridge replacement. Just wanted to comment. It's hard to tell here because they put some dirt here, but we uncovered behind the back wall of this when they started taking out the old bridge. There was a hole in here you could crawl in and almost walk around, and it was so big. So it's a good thing we got to this project when we did. It's something you couldn't see from the outside. It sucked the material underneath the back wall. But construction, that culvert completion doesn't look very long from that angle, but that's 80 foot long, so it's a pretty good sized box culvert. And like I said, that should be wrapped up here by the end of the week. Just a quick overview of the construction projects for the year. Shipley Road will happen later in the fall. It's already been let. Fernald Stub's actually getting paved today. And McFarland Park Stub will get paved Thursday is the plan for that. E18's already going to be done. And then there's 4 box culvert projects, which probably won't happen until spring. So I'll probably have a fall letting on that. Quickly, wanted to bring you up speed on this Ryerson project. This is south of Ames. This is our historic bridge over the Skunk River. We closed that about 10 years ago, and when we closed that, it cut off public access to this yellow-colored property here, which Jerry Ryerson farms. So we've been working for about 10 years trying to get him. He lives on this corner down here. We're getting him easements through this ground here to get up to his legal access up here. So we finally got that wrapped up, and Jerry's very appreciative. We've got easements all the way. We had 3 different property owners to work with, and, of course, they're all 4 different owners throughout the country. So it takes time, but we finally got it wrapped up, and Jerry's very appreciative of that. While we're talking about right-of-way, I wanted to mention 590th paving out to Vetters. We've hit a roadblock, unfortunately, with right-of-way. It's difficult. You never know what the timeline is going to be for right-of-way because you always run into things like this. The Flexicoil side, we cannot find a person to talk to. We're working with a facility manager, and they have no authority to sign for property rights. So all they will do is forward it on into the company, but they will not give us contact information. They'll just say, we forward it. So it's been a month and a half working with that, and we're starting to get frustrated because we don't hear anything back. We've tracked down the original president who signed for the property originally, and he's out of Canada somewhere, and we found out he no longer works for the company. We're not getting any response back. It's frustrating, but I don't know how long this is going to take us. We're working as hard as we can and hitting every angle we can. The taxes go to some accounting firm. We just don't know where to head until we hear back from them. If you have any contacts with Flexicoil, not getting the impression back from them, they really care if it gets paved or not. So I would think they would like it to be paved out in front of their business. But so that could possibly push the project into next spring because we pretty much need to have it let by June to give utilities and everything a chance to move before.
You keeping better informed?
That was my next step. I was thinking about that, see if he knew of anybody over there too. He could maybe talk to him, but that's another part of buying right-of-way. You can't pressure people into signing. So we have to be careful what we do on our end. There's certain procedures you have to follow. But
yeah, and I'm not asking them to pressure. I want to make sure that they're aware that we've done what we can do. Now we're waiting on their neighbor across the road in order to be able to move ahead.
Sure. Still going to get done, but it could be delayed. That's the main point I wanted to bring up to you. Real quick, our dust control applications were due last Friday, the 4th, and applications will be May 24th and 25th. It's always been in June for a number of years, but we moved it up before the Memorial Weekend holiday due to some requests in the past. So second application will be in August 2nd and 3rd. We did get the millings down on 600, so take a look at that when you get a chance. Let me know if you think anything more needs to be done.
Drove past there. Drove out there last Friday. Yep. Couldn't. I tried as hard as I could, Nancy. I could not get any desk cloud behind me.
With the mild winter, equipment repairs have been really good. I just wanted to comment, we did have a single axle truck engine blow, so that's $15,000 for one engine, so that hurts. But other than that, we're able to actually get some of the items we've neglected in the past, tires, blades, get a little more caught up on that, so that's a good thing. A couple of drainage district issues I wanted to pass along. These are both drainage districts that are going to require hearings, so I wanted to show you those. First one is Boone Story 3. This was early in the spring when it was very dry, about a foot and a half of water sitting. This is the Boone County Line Road, so that's Boone County on the other side. Their part of the open ditch doesn't have many trees, but when you go back the other direction, it's 3 miles, really comparable to Milford 32. A lot of trees. Tile outlets are underwater, another big one underwater. Boone's actually out there repairing part of the district tile when I took this picture, but difficult part of this when we're setting the hearing up is if we want to have an engineer come in and do, the code requires an engineer come in and give an estimate, and that all costs money. And we don't have a good feel from the public now if they really want to do this project or not, because the request is coming from a renter that won't be paying for any of it. So I requested a written letter from him from actual property owners, and he did submit that to the board a couple months ago, so we do need to take some sort of action, but something to think about, whether the board wants to hire the engineer to go out before the hearing. And it's a joint district, so Boone's, we've asked the same question to Boone, and I haven't heard a response from Scott Wall yet, and what Boone's thinking is on that, if they want to invest the money before the meeting or not. And the other one is just north of town here, DDL 10. They put a concrete tile in here in the 50s, and it's hard to see here, but the top's all cracked, it's collapsed, and this picture is, the farmers come in here, farmers are farming every inch of ground they can find. Now, I don't think this was ever farmed in the past, so it was all full of these trees. He hired a contractor to clear it, and when they found that, each one of these flags are the holes of the tile that's collapsed. So there's a 300-foot stretch here that needs to be replaced, and that's the one where it was a $20,000 estimate. That's right at the threshold for hearing, so we need to have a hearing for this one, too. So that's where those two stand. Scott's supposed to be setting up the hearings for those. Real quick, we did lose a valuable member of our staff. Austin Kane resigned a week or two ago. He's our engineering tech, has most of the design experience in the office. So sorry to lose him. And applications for that position are open until June 1st, and hopefully we get somebody with some experience to fill that position. And lastly, RagBrite is coming through July 25th through Story City and all the way across the 18. We're going to do some maintenance to some cracks to smooth things out, which was really planned anyway, so it was good timing for that. But it'd be good to have it come all the way, almost all the way across Story County.
I wish we'd probably let Brett know our veterans and Renee. Maybe they can get out and sell some of those nice T-shirts for the support for our Freedom Flight folks there, because they will have a lot of people coming through Story County. Yeah. Good. Okay. Right.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Liaison assignment, Paul. And I will pass. And I will assume that Rick probably will, too. So, Ted, why don't you get up and stretch just for a minute as you begin to try to move this direction. And
blown clear past lunch now.
And Leanne. What did Mark say? Oh, well, I'd even go to lunch with you as long as you're going to pay for yourself. Okay. Our next item on the agenda is a presentation of the final report from the Government Restructuring Committee. First of all, we wanted to thank Ted Tedesco, co-chair, along with Sandy Opstreet, who co-chaired this committee, as well as all of the other members. And due to the length of our board meeting this morning. Several members had to leave. So, Ted, you've got the dubious honor, and take it away. Thank you.
It just occurred to me, Ted, that in the year that you guys have been doing this study, this is the first board meeting you had to sit through. Wasn't it kind of enlightening?
I only sat through them for about 30 years before. Thank you, Chairman Clinton and Supervisors Sanders and Toot, here representing the committee. We are filing with you our final report. We'd like to have you note that this is probably one of the first government committees that is reporting about 30 days early as compared to everything else that's going on at the State House, etc. Because the report is a package of probably over 50 pages with all the appendages, etc., what we would really like to do is file this with you, give you time to digest it. We would like to schedule an evening meeting open to the public. We have a PowerPoint we would like to do, and members of the committee would like to make comments. We will have a couple that aren't present because, like you, Rick, Tom's having to leave tomorrow for Florida for parents' illness, etc. I know Senator McJimsey leaves after the 9th of June, I believe. And I'm going to leave and go fishing a little bit in this time, too. And I know Paul and I have conversed a little bit. One thing I would like to say is that I would like to thank all of you, the electeds of Story County, the staff, all of your employees for their cooperation during this about 10 months. The committee went to all the facilities, talked with all the department heads, electeds, employees, to get a good background. Everybody came with an open mind, have looked at this very seriously, taken this duty responsibly. They've diligently worked and dedicated their time. A couple of things that we, general observations. One, county government is an 1800 structure, and here we are in the 21st century. The other thing that we notice is the paradigm shifts because every time cities enlarge, the geographical jurisdiction of the county actually goes down. There are things in this report that talks about the future, how county government needs to change to meet those needs to help cities and citizens of the county. So we thank you again for your cooperation. Did you come up with any dates, Paul?
I would just as soon do it sometime this month.
Sooner
the better. And I looked at our calendar yesterday. I think we're all pretty wide open. So if you want to schedule for a week out or 10 days out, and it doesn't matter, any night of the week would work. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be this won't be in conjunction with a regular meeting. It'll simply be a special meeting to discuss.
I'll get together with Leanne. I'm going to guess at this point in time that it might be toward the end of the month. Okay, I think there's a Wednesday, Thursday in there that we could work with.
We would get 29th is the Tuesday, and that's not good for me, and the 31st is a Thursday, and that's not good for me. So if it's that week, we would need to do it on Wednesday the 30th.
Yeah. Okay. And I would be remiss not to thank Leanne for all the things she did and Al Hahn, the logistics of transporting this committee. So thank you all.
Paul, will you work then with Ted and so forth to finalize the date, and we'll get it posted and notice out to the public and so forth, okay? All right. Thank you so much.
Ted, thank you, man.
It looks like quite a document.
You guys have done a great job putting it together, and it'll be interesting to read through it.
Right. Yeah, we probably need to make a motion.
Yeah, motion to receive.
To receive it or for the meeting? I'll make a motion. We receive the final report from the Government Restructuring Committee and add a special evening meeting, the date to be determined. And
I'll second that with our thanks to the committee.
It's It's been moved and second to receive the final report from the Government Restructuring Committee and to set a date to be determined for an evening meeting open to the public to discuss this. And a special thanks to the committee for all of their efforts.
Is this available in electronic form that we can get it up on the website so that citizens can review it? It'll be on this afternoon.
This meeting gets over.
Thank you.
Okay.
So by tomorrow morning at the latest.
With that, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Okay. All right. Good. Okay.
We're still on the first page.
I know. I'm now ready to go to the second page. Consideration of personnel actions. I think everything is all accounted for as submitted here.
Move approval. Second.
Been moved and second the approval of the personnel actions. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Personnel actions are approved. Motions to approval of claims.
I don't like this claims week near as much as I like the one 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
You want to make a motion?
Yeah, I'll move approval of the claims.
Second.
It's been moved and second the approval of the claims of 5-10-12. Hearing no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Claims are approved.
To roll now.
Okay. 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 Item next 13 is the consent agenda. All items under the consent agenda is for
move approval.
Second.
And moved and second the approval of the consent agenda as submitted. Hearing no further discussion, roll call, Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. The consent agenda is adopted. Okay. Then we move down to public forum number two. This is an opportunity where members of the audience may address the board. And we will take no action at this time due to the open meeting records, but is there anyone that would like to discuss an item? Okay, seeing none, then we'll move to announcements from the supervisors.
Pass.
Toot, Sanders?
Yeah, I just want to give you guys a heads up. I serve on the Story County Policy Prevention Board, and one of the things that came out of yesterday's meeting was the board is going to write a letter to the editor in response to the editorial from the Tribune calling for the end of VSHA. I will say I actually did not support or the original call to write a letter in response and voted against it. But then in Congress, after it passed that we were writing the letter, as you guys will appreciate that I do, I ended up in charge of writing the first draft. So I'm at least going to have some say in what it says and what it's going to come down to, I believe, is the Policy Prevention Board is going to recognize the extreme value to the community and to Iowa State that VSHA provides, the historical relevance, and fully in support of the ongoing official VSHA. It's the unofficial VSHA that occurs around it that we struggle with, obviously culminating in a death of a young fellow this year falling from a balcony, and part of the role of the Policy Prevention Board of Story County as we see it is to call out those areas that we need to do a better job of. And so be aware that my name may be attached to something like that, and we'll go from there.
As long as you're speaking as Rick Sanders.
Exactly.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. You can certainly bring it to the board if they would desire to have board approval of such a proposal. Quite frequently, sometimes they do that, so I appreciate that. Just as an FYI, as you recall, on the consent agenda today, item number 13 talked about the acknowledgement, the agreement between the Heart of Iowa Regional Transit Agency and Heartland Senior Service in the transition of the operations as of July 1st. Tomorrow morning, the HERTA board will have a conference call look at approving a contract with SciRide for the Dial-A-Ride service, effective also July 1st. The board have been in constant communication with Caris from SciRide Director and Julia Castillo, the Heartland Director, at our board, and I think we have all the contract language and information approved by the attorneys, and the board hopefully will take action one way or the other to approve this contract, and that'll is scheduled to take place at 7:45 tomorrow morning. So I'm hoping that I can make it since I'm chairing that board. Okay. So with that, as you know, I will be leaving tomorrow afternoon. I will be attending the National League of Cities Risk Conference as a trustee member to IMWCA, the board, Workers' Comp Board. Our annual meeting will be in St. Louis for the next 3 days, the rest of this week, so I will be down there attending that conference as well.
Okay. Travel safely and move adjournment.
Okay. It's been moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. Meeting is adjourned. Please note a record.